ต้องวอนเรียกรักด้วยใจร้อนโอ้ยรักร้อนมันร้อนไม่หยุดพักเมื่อร้อนรักสมรักจึงหายร้อนร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักรักร้อนมันร้อนไม่หยุดพักเมื่อร้อนรักสมรักจึงหายร้อนร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรัก
Steve Berg is here. Do you want me to play another song or you want to go right into it?
It's up to you, man.
Okay. I want to try and... is that one working?
Hello, hello.
There we go. I collected a few things recently. Not a lot, like about six songs. I want to try an experiment a little later.
Ooh, yeah.
No, I found a song that goes along real well with watching hamsters run around. I heard the song. It's like, this is hamsters running on a wheel or mice. So I put it along with the video, and I cracked myself up. So
it's like Pink Floyd and Wizard of Oz, right?
Yeah. Except that, yeah, exactly. I got to like tell people, you just have to put in a hamster wheel or something like that. And the one is, I think there's one called Two Hamsters, One Wheel. It works real well with that one. Which intro? Steve's a guest. He can choose. Original intro, second intro with Greg, or the third one with Anti-ETH?
You know, I love the Anti-ETH. I love the one, hey, it's Greg.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do that.
Yeah, we haven't had that one in a while. Here, let's.
What movie is that from?
It is from an old, what is it, Lone Ranger radio show.
Really?
My sister-in-law found it. Her and her boyfriend said, there's this really cool part. There's a character in one of the old Lone Ranger shows, like from the 40s or whatever, a radio show.
Right.
And the character, it's like it was a villain, and his name was Greg. It wasn't like Black Bart or anything like that. It was Greg.
It's not a very menacing name.
No, it's not.
I gotta tell you.
It's not menacing at all. But that's what I stole it from.
Hey, who? What? Get your hands up.
Stand where you are. Don't move.
Don't reach for them guns.
Take it easy, you galoots. Put away the hardware and relax.
It's Greg.
Into the music and storm.
Greetings, my friend.
It never gets old.
We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. Yeah. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
I was just
going to
ask that.
Whose voice that was?
My first fanboy question.
Yeah, it's who says Radio Mysterioso? Yeah, yeah, it's...
cross that off the list?
Yeah. Yes, you have to be quite... Yeah, see what I'm doing here? Yeah, you can take it off of there and hold it.
Let's do that.
You've held microphones before.
I've held mics.
Yeah.
I'm used to this.
Steve Berg is a comedy writer and works on, has done a bit of work in the industry, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Looks like you brought in some books, too.
Yeah, your books.
Oh, and when I heard that, I heard this from Tim Binal, actually.
What?
That about you being a writer for various shows. We'll get into which one.
Yeah, we can get into it. We'll get into it.
Yeah. Do you want to try that experiment first?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm so game for it. I don't even know what it is. I love it.
I gotta find it first because I want Steve to see it too when we do it. What I told him, there we got the whole thing in. What I told him was that I saw a. I encountered some music online on a site called Radio O, which I am now contributing music to. But what it is you there's a little graphic with years from like 1900 to the present by decade and a map of the world. And you can type in, you like indicate, like I'll put like 1940 Afghanistan. And if there's something there, it'll come up and play you music from 1940 from Afghanistan.
Are you kidding me?
And you can play it. You have slow, fast, or weird. So I always put fast and weird.
When in doubt.
Yeah, fast and weird, you know. But one of the songs I found, I think, was 1950s Uzbekistan, I think. And as soon as I heard it, wait, let me find the video first so I can set it up. The minute I heard it, and everybody can, I want everybody at home to play along.
You hear that, people? Get ready.
Yeah. The minute I heard it, I knew what it was the soundtrack for. So go to YouTube, everybody, if you're in front of the computer, and type in a hamster wheel, H-A-M-S, stir wheel, and you'll find something called Two Hamsters, One Wheel, and I'll give you a few seconds to find that, and I got to find my playlist here with it on there.
Do you think most of your listeners will know the what that's parodying?
You can explain it if you like.
Well, there was...
I like the videos of people reacting to that
better
than the actual video itself.
I actually couldn't watch the video. I'm very squeamish like that. I watched the reaction videos, which were amazing.
Yeah. So if you've got it now, I'll wait. Hamster wheel. Put in two hamsters, one wheel. Now, as soon as I heard this song, I knew it was exactly... That's exactly what it was for. So let me show Steve so he can see it. So it'll probably start a little bit early. Yeah, I'll start the music early because it's funnier that way, I think.
He's cute. Or she.
Yeah. Where's the music? Oh. Oh, turn down the audio on the video. There we go.
I mean, it's undeniable.
Yeah.
Jim Blaley works. I mean, you have to add this music to it.
Yes, I know. I'll have to download the video and then add it. Somebody else is going to do it first now. Oh, but they got to get the music. Unfortunately, it's shorter than the song, so just take it back to the beginning.
Oh, Marty popped out.
Yeah. They
tapped
out already.
The music changed, though. Yeah. Great.
Sometimes it times out real well. When they're going...
Yeah, and he's flipping back a little bit. Good Lord. I mean... I can't tell if they're having fun or if this is, like, hell for them.
I don't know. They keep doing it. They must like it.
I mean, they
That's like a thrill ride.
Right.
Here, you get running and I'll stick to the wall
Look
this time.
Look at that. Those little rascals are just going... Oh, my Lord.
Oh, it ended again. I'm sorry, you got to keep running. I'm going to have to loop it.
the music switched right into something.
Yeah. Everybody claps for them.
Yay!
Yay, hamsters! Yay.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
That's called Ciocarla by Fanica Luca. Apparently from an Eastern European country. I think it was Uzbekistan or whatever it was called then from in the 1950s. But anyway, it just came up on the list. I was like, oh, God, I got to get a recording of this.
I mean, it's amazing. Anything with a slide whistle, I'm happy with.
Yeah. I think there's a picture of him, and he's got like he's got pan pipes or something. So I think he did it with like regular.
Really?
Yeah, he was just really good at making. Apparently, he was because there was a big audience listening.
Yeah, no, he was dialed in.
Anyway, so that's the new hamster running wheel running song.
Man, well, you know this. We needed one.
Oh, let me go on. Let me put the Facebook up here so I can at least see if anybody's saying anything. I was so excited to have you here. I forgot Facebook.
Tim Benal sent me a nice message before this.
Oh, yeah? What'd he say?
Tell me good luck. I'm excited to listen.
Ah!
I like that guy.
He's a great guy.
Seems like a fine man and a great show.
Yep. I was on there last week. We talked, and then he called me later, and he said, do you think the show went okay? I don't know if it went okay. We were just talking about stuff. I said, that's what your show's about.
Do you guys still even worry if your shows are okay?
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, you're always like, oh, no, that show not good.
I am never exactly sure if the... Well, sometimes I'm pretty sure the show went really well.
Right.
But most times I'm kind of like, I don't know if it was great or terrible or what. It was passable.
Yeah.
And then I listen to it again, and, that's when I start doing editing and all that, and I take out all the... I mean, so far, everything here I'm just going to leave in, obviously. So I had met you... A year or two, maybe?
Yeah,
ago?
Like a year and a half, 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, you said, hey, I'm in L.A., can I take you out to lunch?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was a girl, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I said, yes, sure, okay. And we went to the... I'm going to sneeze.
The world-famous farmer's market?
Yes, we went to the world-famous farmer's market, and... did we go to the same place the second time, too?
We did.
The Singapore Banana Leaf? Yeah.
But that place, that's the best place there, so... Well, I like the Cajun place, too.
Oh, there we are. Oh, and Steve put it up. He put up two hamsters, one wheel. Yeah. Thank you, Steve. What Tim told me when he said, do you know what Steve does? I said, no. He said he's a writer. He's a writer for what most people would know.
Well, I'm to be...
And an actor.
More of an actor. I mean, like, I do write, but I mean, yeah. I've made my living as an actor. Most of the writing I do is like punch-ups for friends. I mean, I write a lot of stuff, but not much of it is successful. So, one of those situations. But I do write a lot, yes.
That's funny. Usually that somebody's a performer and they make – what I hear is they make more money doing the writing part.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just it kind of worked opposite for me. Because I feel like I'm not like one of those like Harvard-trained like, you know
– You're not from the Harvard Lampoon. Yeah.
Yeah. And so – I was never good at writing, like, network sitcoms that 50 million people can enjoy.
Yeah.
But, more niche, weird stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that because John Mulaney is a great writer.
Great writer.
He's very funny writer.
Yep.
But his show wasn't that great.
It wasn't good. It didn't translate.
And I gave him like four or five chances.
Yeah, it's so hard, I think, when you get to network TV, like, NBC, ABC. Because, I mean, like, and there is
obviously... It starts closing in and you can't exactly do...
There's so many cooks in the kitchen and they want to make the whole country laugh as opposed to, like, FX where they don't need a huge audience. So
right.
You can get a little more weird with it.
Yeah. Well, what would people know you from? I knew you from when he mentioned Drunk History.
A lot of people
because I love that show.
Yeah, it's a great show. I just recorded a new one a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
it was fun. I think I don't remember much, but I think a lot of people. Drunk History is a Comedy Central show called Idiot Sitter.
Yeah,
that we're about ready to start doing season two on.
Oh, excellent!
Yeah, it's good. So yeah, I do a lot of stuff for Comedy Central, I guess.
And, cool.
Yeah.
Where's their office here? Are they up in Burbank?
They have the one. Well, the main office is in Santa Monica.
Oh, okay.
Right on 20th and
Everything's
Colorado.
Either, if they're doing well, they're in Santa Monica.
Everything is. And so half my auditions are in Santa Monica, and I live so far, so it's pain in the ass to drive there.
Yeah.
Spend a lot of time in the car.
Yeah, or you just, well, you can't, they never ask you when you're going to want to be there. They always
no,
make
they're
it
like, you'll be
right
here.
Right when it's really the worst time for traffic, oh, which is any time except for 2 a.m. to 3 or 4 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nightmare. But I always pleasure delay Radio Misterioso. Gets me through traffic.
Ah.
Yeah.
Closer.
Sorry.
Ooh, that's hello. Excellent. There, ooh, now I can turn the level down.
Catching the deep timbre of my voice.
Yes. See, I'm doing, you've heard me do this before. It's like having the seat a little higher.
Yeah.
I will crank the bass ever so slightly on
it. It made me have better
just like
posture,
that
too.
Yes.
I feel like I need to sit up.
Sit up and speak. Sit up and speak from your diaphragm. So, I was talking to Red Pill the other day, and he said, oh, you're going to have Steve on the show? you should pitch him a drunk history on a UFO. Famous UFO case.
You should. I did Roswell last season.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Who did the? Who was the person that doing the? Who was the drunk person?
I was the drunk person.
Oh, excellent.
I was the drunk person telling the Roswell story, and they needed it to fit into like some kind of resolution. So I just went with the Project Mogul thing because actually, to me, I kind of think that is the most likely thing. I'm not a big Roswell guy, but let me tell you what was funny about it. Is that Derek and I went to go shoot some B-roll in Roswell during the...
they let you go out there?
They flew us out there, and we just, you know, kind of, like, interviewed people and, you know, screwed around. But it was so interesting. People were so nice to me there and so nice. And then after they saw the episode, I got all these emails from people because they were so mad. Because I guess, my version of debunking Roswell. But they were so pissed off.
You're never welcome in Roswell again.
More or less. I ruined their tourism.
You have no effect whatsoever on their tourism. I can almost guarantee you that.
Good. Thank God, because I felt kind of bad, actually.
Yeah, they're gonna have two less people showing up out of the 50,000 that show up there every year.
Exactly.
So they hate your guts now.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah, well, you can't have an open-ended thing on TV. People get mad. You have to have an answer.
Yeah.
You can't equivocate.
Yeah.
I've been on shows where it's like, you're going to have to tell us what you actually believe. And I was like, well, I don't actually believe anything.
Anything, yeah.
You know, with a few exceptions, I haven't made my mind up.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that. It doesn't work on TV. It's like, well, then I guess I won't be on this show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I did have to come. But I don't feel terrible about, thing with Project Mogul, because if you made me pick one of the popular theories, I'd be like, yeah, that seems
you
the most logical
used Nyx,
to me.
Then it would have been a lot more expensive.
Well, man, because
you
would have
had to get like Japanese midgets. And...
Nick's theory wasn't in the budget, I guarantee it.
Well, now I'm gonna have to look that one up.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun one.
Is there an on-demand for that somehow through Apple TV? Because I cut off my satellite.
I would bet so. I would bet there's definitely.
It'd be easy to look up.
They're pretty easy to find.
Yeah, Steve's probably looking it up right now.
Yeah. You know, in fact, next time I see you, I'll bring you a DVD.
Okay.
Of every season.
Whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. Be my pleasure.
Some of those were, I mean, a lot of them, but somebody at work told me about it, last place I worked, and I started watching them, and I became a fan, and then I got my, when I lost my job, I cut off the satellites.
Right.
I couldn't see it anymore. So the last one I remember seeing was the one with Winona Ryder in it, of all people.
You know, I was an actor in that one. I played her husband.
Oh, really?
And so I was standing around with Winona Ryder for 10 hours, which was amazing. She was really sweet. She smoked 1,000 cigarettes.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
She's still really Gen X-y, man, you know?
Is she? Yeah.
Holding on to that Reality Bites mode.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty cool, though. I like her. She's a really nice human being.
Really?
Yeah.
That is good. You know what? I get the feeling that she is somehow.
Yeah.
There's other people. I'm trying to think of somebody you get the feeling probably isn't. I don't know. Well, I was going to say Gary Busey, but everybody knows he's insane. So. Have you seen those videos of him like going off on people?
Yeah, but I chalk it up to the head injury.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he did hurt his head pretty significantly. And I don't think
he
was
did.
The same after that.
Really? Yeah, because people get that way.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll let Gary Busey off the hook.
We'll give Busey a pass.
Is Kevin Spacey kind of an asshole?
I don't know.
I don't know.
He seems scary, though.
He does.
I would be nervous around him.
Yeah.
I have a friend who works on the show House of Cards, so I could...
Right.
I'll see if I can get a...
Ask and see.
Yeah, I'll get the story on Spacey.
Yeah. My proposal for one is... What was it? Either Socorro or Pascagoula.
Pascagoula. I mean,
But nobody knows those. So, I mean, you know.
But that'd be that's exactly why they're great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
because half the stuff on there, it's like, I didn't know this part of history. And,
those are the best ones. Yeah. But you have no idea. Like,
yeah, because you're learning.
I think Socorro would be amazing.
Yeah.
It really
Yeah, because you could put the. And I don't know what the resolution is, though. Because my only resolution is to be, oh, some idiot said it was a prank by college students, which is completely stupid.
There's no way. There's no way. And then a guy named Ray Stanford said he has pictures of it.
Yes.
That guy.
Ray, 14,000-foot mothership.
I get you know, I want to be excited about him.
And, yes,
and
me
like
too.
All the claims he has. But,
yes.
And Chris O'Brien gives a lot of, you know,
yes.
credibility for me. I like that guy a lot. You know,
I do too. I mean, I trust
man.
Chris
he's a
normally,
good writer,
and,
you know.
So this one makes me go, really?
Yeah.
Because Ray said, hey, anytime you're in D.C., come on over. I'll show the stuff to you. You can see everything and see what you think. And I was there once, and my wife isn't about to waste time going to Ray Stanford's house to watch films of UFOs.
Well, here's interesting, because I think Chris did say he'll show people if you go there.
Yeah.
I wrote him on the Paracast, through the Paracast. And like private messaged him like a year or two ago and said,
yeah.
I would love to go see Ray Stanford's stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was actually thinking about bringing like a small camera crew with me or just going by myself.
Yeah,
and
he wouldn't let you. He would let you see it, though, but not with a camera crew, I think.
But Chris said, like, who are you? Why do you have a reason to see this stuff? You would need to, like, prove that you are, like, a legitimate, like, reason. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not that. I'm just a nightclub back.
Yeah, because
I'm a dumb actor. I have no reason, but
yeah, I'm not even thinking in those terms. Of like, well, Chris says I'm okay, so I can go over and see.
Yeah,
it.
You probably get a pat. You know, if you're you're one of the guys, but
I guess,
man,
I didn't try to be.
I would, but it just happened.
Yeah,
but man, I would love to go. I would fly. That'd be worth the plane ticket to me.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, and I'm
it
not
was,
a man.
But we went to D.C., but I said I knew that invitation was open, but. I couldn't tell my wife, hey, by the way, for like 4 hours here on our 4-day vacation, we're going to go to Ray Stanford's house and watch. You know, and she's pretty nice to me about just about everything, but it's kind of like, I'm not going to push that one on her.
Yeah, and there's probably been a handful of those kind of moments where you went to go see a
this one
spot or.
Yeah, well, the only time we ever got in any kind of, not even an argument, but a disagreement was when we were in Florence and I wanted to go see a monastery that was open to the public like once a month or a year or something like that with Giotto frescoes in it. And my degree's in art history, you know, the useful degree I've talked about.
Yeah.
And I said, holy shit, you know, I know about those frescoes. You never get to see them.
Right.
I want to go see those frescoes. And she said, I want to go shopping. And I said, you can go shopping anywhere. They only open these frescoes once every... And she said, yeah, but I can't always go shopping in Florence. And I was like,
damn it.
Because I dragged her through the Uffizi, and, you know, she liked it. Then after about an hour or two, she was kind of like, let's get out of here. Yeah. I can stay in there for the entire – I can go in when they open and stay till they close.
Right.
It's fine with me. But she wasn't interested in that, which is fine.
I mean, you know, you got to get me – I mean, my wife lives about – she's from Pennsylvania and lives about an hour away from Kecksburg. Last time we were there, and we only had a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And I had been bugging her, and I made her drive me out there, and it was just like this acorn –
yeah, on a stand.
Like, on a stand, but you know what? It was worth it. I was really
I want to go to Clarksburg. I mean, I want to go to Mothman.
Point Pleasant?
Yeah, I want to go to Point Pleasant.
So do
take
I,
a
man.
Yeah, see, you know, because I went to the Gray Barker Museum once. A Gray Barker room at the Clarksburg Library.
And that's in Point Pleasant?
That's in Clarksburg, West Virginia.
Clarksburg.
So we didn't quite make it to Point Pleasant. That was another, like, couple hours, and we didn't have enough time.
Oh, I'd love to go. I love that book, man.
Which one?
Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's just so fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe one thing in it, but I just love it so much. It's so exciting.
I believe it when I'm reading it, which is why it's a great book.
Me too. I mean...
And the, you know, like people say, I think I was on the Paracast the other day, and I actually raised my voice at Chris and Gene.
Did you? Why?
Because, and it's on the after the Paracast, they did it on the like the pay thing.
Right, yeah.
But what they said was, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem thing. It's like, you have to point out people that are charlatans and that are lying and because it holds the field back and it'll never get any respectability. And I let them finish. I kept trying to say something. They wouldn't let me. So finally, I was just silent. And after about 10 minutes of this, Gene said, oh, I think Greg might want to say something. And I said, look... I am not the policeman. I don't care about the respectability. I don't think it'll ever get any respectability. Not the way people are doing it right now and the way things are set up and the way that the subject is. You can't get respectability for something that people can't produce on demand. It's just not going to happen.
And it's so also a give waste up on the of time. Yeah. It's a futile effort. Like,
yeah.
And that's something you talk about a lot, and I totally agree with. It's like...
Yeah.
There's a limited amount of time people can devote to looking into these things. So
you're drifting.
Sorry. But there's a limited amount of time people have to look into these topics.
Yeah.
So I feel like the time should be spent in the best way possible. You know.
Yeah. Unless there's people like taking people's life savings, like Sean Morton did. That.
Right. Oh,
so
God.
I will say, and plus I had horrible experiences with him personally. So that I will say something about him, or maybe at some extent Cal Korf, or to some extent Stephen Greer, or something like that. But I don't waste time going, these idiots, and let's get them on my show and tear them a new one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to, there's nothing being accomplished there except making yourself feel better and that you've protected the field from something. And Red Pill pointed something out to me, too. He said, who's making the laws here?
Yeah.
What if somebody points out that you're the bad person? Are they wrong? Well, of course we're not wrong, because I'm right. I mean...
Yeah, well, it's like Royce, the guy who has like
Royce Myers,
the UFO Hall of Fame or yes. the Hall of Shame thing. Yeah. It's like,
I love that thing.
I love it, but I agree with it. But it's like, you know, it's so. I mean, they're
well. That I can point out. Somebody has done it. Go to Royce Myers. That those guys they host it now. They're hosted. Paracast hosts their server hosts that old Royce Myers site.
Are you on the Hall of Fame?
I'm not neither, and I don't care.
Good.
I don't want to be in any hall of anything.
You're not a groups guy.
Nah. Anyway, so the thing is, like, it'd be nice to have a police department for ufology, but then it's like, do you want a police department? Because what if you don't agree with them? What if they come after you? And what if, you know, it's like...
I also have to say, you know, you being a comedy fan and, you know... Maybe comedy's a sort of a through line we'll talk about. But
yeah, rules piss me off.
I also, exactly, I totally agree, which there are a lot of rules in comedy nowadays. But, you know, you take Cal Korf, Greer, and some of these guys out of it, and who am I going to laugh at? You know, like,
yeah.
I love it. It's like performance art to me. Sometimes yeah. I'm like, they're so either committed to this crazy, or no, I shouldn't say crazy, because what do I know? This, whatever premise they have.
I think some of them are kind of the definition of crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I kind of celebrate those weirdos, to be honest. Like, I mean, Bill Cooper?
Yep.
Right? Look, I think he was kind of an awful person, but, I mean, hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
And I think he knew he was being hilarious.
He was playing
probably
a
part. Probably 75% of his shtick was just to outrage people.
Of course. And it's brilliant.
And
it's
he
Alex
knew
Jones.
He was doing it. Alex he was serious about it, but he knew he was doing it, I think.
I totally agree. A show idea I've been wanting to pitch to my managers, at least, is like almost like a Daily Show or Stephen Colbert version, but more like it's an Alex Jones parody. Like for Comedy Central, yeah, where you get this guy who just, you know, is just so venomous and just so mad about
Wake
everything.
Wake up, America!
It would be so funny, I think.
It would.
I think someone take that idea and run with it.
I think so. Here, I'll send you the show proposal, and then, you know,
There we go. I'll get it into the hands.
Okay.
That's all I can promise.
But that'd be a great idea.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
I was just looking. It's every once in a while I'll look down here and see what people are saying. Usually it's Steve. Oh, he said the Russ Meyer Hall of Fame. It's like, no, not Russ Meyer. Royce Meyer.
I mean, I'm sure Russ Meyer, he should have a Hall of Fame.
Yes, he should. I think he does. It's all his movies.
I'm sure. Yeah, exactly. He's a treasure.
Yeah. You never want to see another tit after you watch Russ Meyer.
It's exhaustion.
I don't want to see any for at least 2 hours now.
Exactly.
Did you listen when Josh Cutchin was on with weird music?
I did. I love that guy, man.
Yeah. He introduced me to a song that was done by this guy, Adriano Celentano, an Italian guy in the 1970s, I believe early 70s. He's Italian, and he made up a song that it's made up of fake words that sound like what Italians think English sounds like.
What?
Did you hear it when it was on? Probably you don't remember it.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't until I was reminded.
I don't remember though, to be honest.
It's like 3:45. Let's listen to that if you don't mind.
Oh no, God!
And we'll go into other stuff. It's called Presencolincesalinquisol. He says it a bunch of times on the song, but yeah, like I said, it's. If you listen, if Italian people listen to people speaking English, this is what it sounds like to them.
No way.
And he made a song of it.
Prison call in answer 9-2-0.
Hear the call, may you say one. Prison call in answer 9-2-0. All right. Boss dying. Tails in my hand, we get a cold. Baby, she's staying yet with Joe. When I stay in the shoes, now I'll hold me the same. Then I hold it, maybe get the color boss dying. Baby, she's saying, right, you can't be seen. You know, if it's all enough, it's just a God, believe it's a sham. My wife, but not so home, but just getting on the curb with no time. Oh, but never since then, I had to choose a girl, my man. You've been trusting a man called the Raider Girls. Oh, for something.
I think Steve liked that one.
Yeah, that's a special song.
Yeah. So I thanks so much to Josh Cutchin for locating that for us.
He's a musician himself, isn't he?
Yeah, he plays tuba.
Tuba?
And when he was on the show after we finished talking about his book, he played tuba.
He did. I remember that. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to read his book. That is on my
list. Yeah, Trojan Feast. He's got another one on smells associated with UFO stuff coming out.
Smells?
Yes, UFOs and smells.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he says it's even more difficult to write than the taste one.
I mean, I cannot imagine that being easy. Is he going to cover all the senses? Is that like his thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Good Lord, that's amazing.
Yeah. So Adriano Celentano with Prison All and SL9 Cusol.
That's the exact pronunciation. <Yeah.
laughs> look at the spelling.
I mean, I'm not even going to try. Yeah. Just embarrass myself.
I was kind of surprised when you said you didn't have any like comedy recordings. What?
Yeah.
Like what? Your life is basically acting in comedy. Yeah. There must be some sort of comedy you grew up with where you went, oh my God, that's the thing I want to do. Who was that? Or who were those people?
Interesting question. You know who I was really into when I was like really little?
Yeah.
Dabney Coleman.
Really?
I saw the movie 9 to 5 with my mom.
Yeah.
She loved that movie. And
yeah.
I saw Dabney Coleman and I'm like, that's the funniest man I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
I thought he was. And I still think he's an amazing, underrated character actor.
Yes.
Like, a comedic. I mean, he's so good in Modern Problems, which is not a great movie, but he's great in it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. He was a big guy for me. Honestly, Eddie Murphy was huge for me. Eddie Murphy's right. Delirious was, like, the first, like, cuffing comedy record I had. And so I.
Yeah.
You know, like, I loved it.
What was it? What's the one with the album where he does the thing about marrying a African woman? And then,
oh, that's Raw. I think that's Raw.
I went to the Comedy Store when he was working that material out, and I was nobody had ever heard it before, and we were all. It was like being on another planet hearing that.
You know, people forget how great he was.
Yeah.
At stand up, he was so funny. His material wasn't like unbelievable, but he just performed it. I mean, he was so electric up there, man.
Yeah, the presentation was what was important with him.
So good.
Somebody who should stay in comedy, in stand-up, is, I can't remember his name, Damon Wayans.
Yeah.
I've seen him live twice, yep. And I had a headache for 3 hours afterward from laughing so hard.
He's very funny, and so is his son, Damon Wayans Jr.
Oh, is he?
He's more of an actor, but he's doing some stand-up now, and he's terrific.
Yeah.
And a great guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, real good dude. He's
so you met him?
I have a mutual friend. He worked on a show called New Girl, and I'm friends with one of the actors on that.
Oh, okay. So, I guess you would, have a recording of Eddie Murphy or something.
I would, yeah. And I have a lot of Bill Hicks recordings. Those are the only ones I could find, but I'm like, oh, you definitely have those.
Yeah, at one point, I was going through the internet and trying to find every bootleg copy of anything that was ever posted, and I gave them to people, too. I created my own. I created my own unreleased Bill Hicks material albums.
He would
love
that.
Put stuff in order, and
God, man, he's... he would be so interesting right now.
Yeah.
It would be so fantastic.
I'm trying to... Oh, there was a... somebody put out a book called What Would Bill Say?
Really?
It was a bunch of people wrote in... It was, I guess, kind of a contest. And if it was picked for the book, it was put in the book. And it's called What Would Bill Say?
No
shit. And it was put out, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 years ago.
I'm going to have to get that.
There ought to be one now.
Yeah. No kidding, man.
I don't know. I mean, it's so... It's to the level where it's more surreal than Bill Hicks actually talking about it.
It's so surreal. It's, I don't know, surreal doesn't even do it justice to what's happening right now.
I'm trying to find the one. Oh yeah, this one. This Bill Hicks, which I know you know, but it's one of my favorites. If I can get it to, there we go.
What about Clinton? Is there any hope in Clinton? Open again. They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here's Love Connection. Watch this and get fat and stupid. By the way, keep drinking beer, you fucking morons.
Yeah. Yeah, Rant in E Minor is probably the best one.
That's the classic. That's what I always tell people to get first.
Really? Because everything else after, well, it's not really a letdown, but that's the best one.
That's the best one. Yeah. It's you'll know if you love Bill Hicks or not. And there's not much of an in-between. I don't know many people are like, yeah, he's okay. It's like
nobody says that. And comedians worship him like God.
They sure do, and they should.
All of them.
They should.
Yeah,
even George Carlin.
Yes,
I remember him saying
he was on Actor's Studio, and they asked him who his favorites were, and Hicks.
He mentioned Hicks.
Yeah.
In another quote, he also said he's like the only guy I've ever considered stealing from is Bill Hicks. I thought that was pretty amazing.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah. And because Carlin's like, I don't know. I feel like taking into consideration body of work and all that stuff, he's my favorite, I would say, of like.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I love George Carlin. He was very big for me.
I have a George Carlin piece here. I've tried to make all these short, like maybe with like between 1 and 3 minutes. This is one of my favorites, and it's later stuff. The thing is, when I was in junior high school, somebody told me, quit listening to Cheech and Chong and listen to listen to George Carlin.
But Cheech and Chong's funny, too.
Yeah,
you know, it's just different.
Yeah, it's just different.
You know, it's just funny. It's not like cerebral, but, you know.
Yeah, and I immediately, you know. But this is later. This is after. I noticed he turned into the angry guy.
Mm.
It seemed to happen, and, you know, thank God he turned into the angry guy. He should have been. Right after Sam Kinison got big. It seems like he took a cue off like Kinison and a few other angry people and just
ran. Interesting.
To me, that's what it made sense to me.
That mean it very well could be. I don't have the I don't remember because, you know, I was pretty young, I guess, when Kinison first came around, but he was a great comedian.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people don't give him credit.
Yeah. Because I saw him at the Comedy Store with three other people on a weekday afternoon in the little room.
Belly room.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yep.
I just walked in there one day. He's like, oh, let's see who's here. And it was Kinison, and nobody had heard of him. And he did the licking the alphabet thing. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy.
Gee, I would have loved to have seen him. And he discovered Hicks.
Yes.
You know, he...
Well, they were both from Texas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He told them to move out here.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And he gave him spots and let him feature for him, and so...
Right.
One more thing about Hicks. If you have never read the book American Scream, I think you would like it.
I haven't read that one. I read
it. Bill Hicks' biography, or, you know, it's a biography, and it is so good. It is so unbelievable. It's
okay, I'll read, because I think there's at least two.
There's another one. I've read that one as well, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But this one just, it's really, like, sad. It's a real sad book, but it's just terrific, man. Oh, my God. It was life-changing for me, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Yeah. Best profile of an entertainer ever, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, I'm going to have to read that one.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it.
Here's
talk about those things. I know that.
George Carlin.
Some people don't like you to mention certain things. Some people don't want you to say this. Some people don't want you to say that. Some people think if you mention some things, they might happen. Some people are really fucking stupid. Did you ever notice that? How many really stupid people you run into during the day? God damn, there's a lot of stupid bastards walking around. Carry a little pad and pencil with you. You wind up with 30 or 40 names by the end of the day. Look at it this way. Think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that. And it doesn't take you very long to spot one of them, does it? Take you about 8 seconds. You'll be listening to some guy. You say, this guy is fucking stupid. Then there are some people, they're not stupid, they're full of shit. That doesn't take very long to spot either, does it? Take you about the same amount of time. You'll be listening to some guy and say, well, he's fairly intelligent. He's full of shit. Then there are some people, they're not stupid, they're not full of shit, they're fucking nuts! Dan Quayle is all three! All three! Stupid, full of shit, and fucking nuts!
I know another one right now.
And where did he get that wife of his? Have you taken a good look at that Marilyn Quayle? Where did he get her? At a Halloween party or something? She looks like Prince Charles, for Christ's sakes. Let me ask you something. Does he actually have to fuck that woman? Huh? God help him. I wouldn't fuck her with a stolen dick. That's my political humor. People like it when you're topical.
Okay, that's one of my favorite George Carlins.
Oh, he's
Steve put a, oh, it's Americans. There's two books: American Scream, Allen Ginsberg's Howl and the Making of the Beat Generation, and American Scream: The Bill Hicks Story.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
popular title.
Yeah,
good old Ginsberg.
Yes.
Is there any of the original? Oh, sorry. Are there any of the beats? Are any of them left?
Corso died. Ferlinghetti's still alive. He's like, okay, in his 90s.
Wow.
He's still up in San Francisco, and he's still, I think, out in public, or at least releasing things out into the public. I saw a newspaper feature on him like about a year ago.
Really?
I think he's still alive. I haven't heard that he died. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Burroughs made it a long time.
Yeah, he did.
He was in his 80s, man.
Yeah.
And he tore his body up, too.
Yeah. He didn't care.
No.
His brain and his body were his laboratory.
Yeah, they were, man. That guy's fascinating. I went to college in the same town he lived, Lawrence, Kansas, and
yeah.
I saw him walking around the campus one time.
Oh!
And I used to go out to his house. I mean, he died right when I went to college, so I saw him, like, months before he passed away.
Yeah.
He was with, like, a nurse walking around, and I used to always drive by his house, and even after he died, just to, like, feel the weird energy. That guy was amazing.
Yeah, and then they took him back and buried him in the family plot in St. Louis.
Yep.
Ken Thomas sent me a gravestone rubbing from.
Really?
Yeah, I still have it. It's huge. It's like about 4 feet long on butcher paper.
Oh my
just
God.
Says William S. Burroughs.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So thank you so much to Ken.
I like that Ken Thomas. He's great when he's been on your show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I know these people, but I don't.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
He was best man at my wedding, Ken Thomas.
I know that. Isn't
yeah.
that weird?
Oh, okay. Of course you do. What did you want to ask? You said
I have a lot of questions. You
well,
mind?
Go.
All right. I'm just going to start with one top of my head because it's one I really want to ask you about.
And keep the microphone
so
on.
So sorry. So sorry. I'm not a.
Come on. You
should
you're
be more professional.
Entertain it. Professional. Go ahead.
Mike Younger.
Oh, yeah.
I am really fascinated by that guy in just some of the stories. Every once in a while, I've heard you talk about him. I heard Richard Serraday talk about him.
Yeah.
And he seems so damn fascinating to me.
Yeah, he
and
was.
One time, maybe it was wishful thinking, I thought I heard you and Richard say you had toyed around with a project about him.
Yeah, we're still toying around with the project.
Oh, are you now?
Yeah. I don't know what's
going to
happen.
Let this be the poke.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how far we're still talking about it.
Right.
The actual doing of it, that may happen sooner or later.
Right.
We both want it to happen. At that, I think, well, I don't know. I don't think we need his wife's permission. I was just going to take those three books he gave Richard and I and a few other people, that assessment with all the, you know, all the secret stuff in it. The government's
you have
doing
that?
Yes, I have them.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the private books he wrote.
Cool.
I hid them for a long time because I was so paranoid. I hid them like in various places in the house. Now they're just sitting on the bookshelf with everything else.
That I mean, he was paranoid too, right? I mean, like to like next level paranoid, or am I?
No. He was like a stage director trying to make people paranoid.
Right.
At least that's from my point of view, that's what he was doing.
Do you think, and I'm sorry, we don't have to talk about this, but like.
We can talk about it.
Okay.
I don't care.
You're
the guest. We talk about what you want.
Is he kind of like Bill Coopery in his way?
No.
No?
No, not at all.
There's so little about him out there that I just don't know.
Well, there's not much because he only spoke to a few people. I guess he had some contact with Norio Hayakawa.
Uh-huh.
And Melinda Leslie, I think, a little bit, and then a few other people that nobody ever really heard of, that are kind of like on a second tier of, they do a lot of research, they do a lot of good work, they do a lot of digging out of facts and history, but they don't write big books and everything. They basically help people that do.
Right.
So he talked to a few of those people too.
Wow.
And he was connected with Naval Intelligence. But we found out later after he died that he wasn't actually in Naval Intelligence, but he was being fed all this stuff and being told to pretend that he was Naval Intelligence to us. He even had tattoos all over his arms.
Really?
Like naval, like these are all the things, what did he say? These are tattoos of all the missions I've been on, the important ones. We're like, you do that? We all do that. And he showed us one and it was a flying saucer. I was like, what is that? He goes, He said, I won't talk about that right now. And he pointed it out to us. He actually said, here's one. That was, this one was interesting. He's like, that's a flying saucer. Yeah,
and so he wasn't actually in the Navy, though, but had these naval tattoos?
Yeah.
That
or
he made to your premise.
Yeah,
man.
Well, that either that or he put them on there somehow so that they're henna tattoos or something. They look real to me.
Holy cow. How'd you meet him in one? In like
Richard introduced us.
Really? Just like where? Like at a coffee shop? Like this is?
I think so. I mean, he said Mike wants to meet you. I was like, what? Why? He goes, because you publish a magazine. And then I met Mikey. He said, well, I read your file. And I said, what file? He said, well, you know, you've written about this stuff. You've been interested in it for a while. There's a file on you. I was like, huh? What?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, that scares you and flatters you at the same time. So, of course, he has your attention.
Yeah, you're right.
So everything he said was to scare me and then to throw information at me because I was open to it. Now I was like, you know, I'm looking to him as the person that's like, oh, there was somebody outside my house. And he goes, oh, let me check up on it. You know, that kind of thing. It's like he's sort of protecting you and all this.
Really?
And, you know, I see some guy at a convention. And it's like, don't talk to that guy. Why not? He's there from, you know, he's a bad guy and he's not there to do anything. It's like, I don't know.
Amazing, man. See, I love
the funny
this
thing
kind
was
of stuff.
He would tell me to say certain things to certain people to freak them out. And it would.
Really?
Yeah. So he had a good source of information.
But do you mean, did it ever cross your mind? Maybe he was kind of like part of the, this is not the right way to phrase it, the William Moore experiment where he was maybe being fed stuff.
No, I thought he was who he said he was.
Okay.
And I never asked for any kind of proof or anything
because
I didn't know to do such a thing.
Right.
I mean, I was just too like, oh, well, some, you know, guy in the military is feeding me information. And the thing is that he would tell you things that actually turned out to be true. He told Richard one time, he said, go down to the Burbank airport on Friday at 3:15 and stand at the end of runway, whatever. And he did. And the stealth fighter flew over him. And this was right after they announced it.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Or he'd say, this was during Bosnia. He'd say, you know, I can't remember specific. Richard probably could. But he'd say, in 2 weeks, they're going to announce that so-and-so happened in Bosnia as if it had just happened. And he was right.
Wow. Oh, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really, so obviously.
So then he can start feeding you other stuff that probably doesn't have, you know, you know, it's like, here's what they're flying out at Area 51. And he'd like bring a suitcase and show me these pictures of these weird like UFO things flying around over a runway with some, you know, big hangars in the background.
Did anything look interesting to you?
They all look kind of interesting. And also, in retrospect, it kind of looked fake.
Right.
So I don't know exactly what was going on. I don't know what he was trying to make me believe.
All these, like, guys like that and, you know, guys like William Moore, they are such great fodder for, like, I mean, like, I think I told you this before. I think Project Beta would make the greatest movie about this topic.
Because yeah,
we've seen aliens come from space.
I had one person interested.
That. Really?
Yeah, and then he said, well, all we have to do now is get a director and somebody attached to it. It's like, that's your job. You're the producer. He seemed to think that was my job. I was like, I don't know anybody.
Well, it's not your job. I'll tell you that.
I mean, it's not. No. A producer does that.
It's exactly what they do. I mean,
so I don't know what, and it was Mark, he was a producer of all the Poltergeist movies.
Okay.
Mark Victor.
Mark Victor.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember he'd call me up. Hello, Greg. This is Mark Victor. That's funny. Really nice guy. Had a really nice lunch with him, like 2 or 3 hours. And then at the end, he said, well, now you have to get somebody attached. It's like, but.
That's
And that was
easy.
The end of it.
Well, I'll tell you, man, if I'm ever in the position to pass that, I mean, it would be just.
Well, we can, you know, I could write a treatment for it and see if anybody even really cares. The other thing it would make is a good TV show.
It would be such a good TV show. Yeah. I keep on thinking of it as.
It would turn into something that had nothing to do with what went on, but the premise is what's important.
The premise is what's important. There's so many great characters. It's at such an interesting time in American history.
Yeah.
It was like the height of the Cold War, really, like when this stuff was. Or is it when the Cold War was kind of ending?
It was the last gasp of the Cold War.
It was like late 80s when Benowitz was.
There, that's better. Keep the microphone like that, please.
Perfect.
Yes, late 70s, early 80s, and then into the mid 80s.
Oh, man.
And that was, you know, Reagan ramped it up.
Yeah.
So that's how it was a heated up Cold War at that point. After he left, then the Soviet Union started to fall. Actually, while he was still in office,
yeah.
The wall came down, right?
Yeah.
And then
right at the end of his term, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. Such an interesting time. I mean, that book is just filled with so, I mean, like, and William Moore is such an interesting character.
Yeah.
My Lord, that guy.
Yeah, I talk to him every once in a while. Every few months, I'll talk to him. And occasionally he'll visit and I get to see him.
Oh, I wish he would do this show again.
I told him that, and he is interested, but he hasn't committed yet.
Yeah.
So I just have to keep kind of needling him a little bit.
Yeah, you know, even it's a tough...
And there will be no announcement. He'll just be on.
Oh, God. That will be huge, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
And I'll shut off the phones while he's on, too, because I don't think he wants to take any, unless he wants to. But
I have some questions. I mean...
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a smartass when I ask these. But I mean, like, Richard
Doty. Yes, you are.
I was thinking about Doty, right?
Yeah.
And he's a cop now, or a retired cop?
He just retired. I think he got his retirement.
What kind of cop would Richard Doty be? Because I was thinking of this almost like as like a sitcom. This guy who's, like, known for all kinds of, you know.
He won't talk to me anymore, so I don't really mind what you say about
okay.
him.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's nothing disparaging. I mean, I think it's just. What kind of a police officer would Richard Doty be? I mean...
I'm not sure if he actually was a beat cop or he had a desk job. I'm not sure.
Well, I do remember someone posted, like, on Facebook a couple years ago. He was doing an interview, like, on local news, talking about some, like, crime burglar spree. And I remember Richard Doty's like, holy shit.
Yeah, and in Grants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really excited about that.
It's, like, halfway between Albuquerque and... what's the one at the edge of the state there? Gallup.
Gallup.
Yeah, it's like halfway point between Albuquerque and Gallup. So it's like, what, about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Albuquerque? I went out there to interview him at a Denny's.
Wow. Oh, that's where UFO, like, top secret talk should be had, I think.
A lot of it is that some of the people I talked to, we would always go to a chain restaurant, or one time we went to a barbecue restaurant. It was right outside the gate of Kirtland.
Wow.
Which apparently a lot of these guys went to because they liked it and was set up the way that they wanted it to be set up.
Right.
Where people couldn't listen and all that. Or somebody did sweeps of the place, or I have no idea.
My God.
But we went, every time we went to eat somewhere, we would never like meet at an office or anything like that. It was always, let's go and eat at this place. I guess another reason is because there's a lot of noise in there and you can't really hear what somebody's saying.
Right.
And you can't hear through the window or anything because there's just so much other noise in a restaurant. The thing was, we would sit at a corner table all the way in the corner every single time. Every person that I did this with, we sat and they'd just say, okay, we're going here. They wouldn't let the waiter take us there. They'd say, I want to sit there. And they would take us there and put us in the corner, even if it was a big booth. They'd put us in the corner and the person would, they didn't face the door. I think it's because they wanted to face me so that anybody in the restaurant couldn't see their lips.
Wow. Now let me ask you this question. How much of that do you think was legit? They don't want people like hearing them talk or show for you.
I don't think it was either. It was habit.
You think it was just habit? Like military, old-time military? Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what makes the most sense to me. I don't think they were saying to me was that... If they couldn't say it to me, they wouldn't. But anything they said to me wasn't that horribly important because it was old.
Right.
It was old news. So they... I think it was just habit. That's where, you know, when you go to talk to a contact, you sit in the corner of the restaurant, you set it up like, you know, the day before or something, so there isn't some big long thing where you're waiting a week where everybody can find out where you're going to meet, and you sit where people can't read your lips, I guess. I mean, they never told me that stuff, but I noticed it was always in a corner seat, and at least two or three booths away from anybody else.
Wow.
And more people might come in, but they try to make it for times when there weren't, you know, we'd go at 3 o'clock, you know, something like 2 or 3 o'clock when the lunch crowd was gone.
How fun was all this, like, playing spot? I mean, because, like, to me, doing what you did and being, like, you know, talking to all these guys, it seems like the coolest thing in the world, man.
It was, in retrospect, it's really cool. What was going on? It just seemed like a thing that I was doing at the time.
Right.
I wasn't like, this is so cool. I'm just like, I got to get this book done.
Yeah, okay. But like now.
Who do I talk to next?
No.
What did he tell me? I can't record it. You know, when I talk to Dodie, he says, I don't want to record it. So after the interview, I jumped in the car, and the entire hour and a half or whatever back to the hotel in Albuquerque, I kept going over the interview in my head over and over and over. And when I got home, I sat down at the computer immediately and typed it up.
Yeah.
It's like 10 pages single-spaced.
Good Lord. That's amazing. And Dodie stopped talking to you, was it because of the Art Bell show or?
Serpo.
Serpo, okay. Yeah. But he did Serpo. I mean, they. Right?
I'm almost certain he was involved.
They trace his IP address, yeah. Right? Okay.
In fact, you know, I'm as certain as can be that he was involved and he didn't want anybody to think he was involved. I don't know why. He was on the, yeah, like you said, he was on the Norrie's show. Talking about it.
Yeah.
It's like, why would he? The only time he's ever been on national radio was Project Beta and that.
Yeah.
So I think he was involved.
Yeah. It seems so, like he was. There was a new Super Serpo release, I think, in December.
Really?
And I tried to read it, but it's
unreadable.
It's garbage. Whoever's writing that really could use an editor. But it seemed like it didn't get much fanfare.
Yeah.
Because I was like trying to like look about, you know, but I think people just don't care anymore.
No. Because it never amounted to anything.
Yeah.
And the thing is that it wasn't done to make UFO people amazed. It was done for some other reason.
And I wonder what that reason was.
Passing messages and seeing who was interested. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Right. Just kind of like throwing a net out and seeing like.
Yeah. What does it catch? Who's interested in this stupid story that isn't a UFO wacko?
Right.
You know, what emails are going back and forth? Let's put a fake message in here, and if somebody figures out the code, what do they say about it if they figured it out? And if they didn't figure it out and it's what we think, we want them to think, who talked about it?
Right.
Now, how did that spread? I think that's what that was.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it's a dumb story on the face of it. It's absolutely unprovable. It's completely ridiculous.
It's so fun though and hilarious to me. A lot of that kind of stuff in the UFO world is stuff I love. I mean, there's nothing to really be learned about the phenomenon, but it's just so entertaining to me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's interesting stuff to think about. It's like an intellectual game, and it makes you think about other things.
Right.
I mean, I don't really care where the thing comes from anymore. I don't know if there's any way to tell. And I think the only way to tell is to get ourselves out of the equation somehow, which I don't think we can do. So if we got to do that, how do we fool ourselves into being outside of the equation? I don't know how that's done.
I have no idea. That seems almost impossible, right?
Yeah. I do not know. I occasionally give it some thought, and maybe I'll figure something out someday. But
right.
That's what's interesting me at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me look through my little question bank, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Steve
has a question bank on his phone.
I'm a huge nerd. my notes don't make much
well,
sense.
Yeah, well, me too. Neither do mine.
Here's one. John Lear as performance artist.
I don't know. Well, yeah. I mean, you can look at him that way, but same way Bill Cooper was a performance artist to me. It's just kind of like he was real interested in the stuff, and he was just he was such a character.
He was, and he would like do pranks. Cause didn't him and Bill Cooper write like that Krill document just to fuck with people?
Did they? I didn't know that.
I think that. Well,
Krill thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm almost nervous to say these kinds of things because the people who listen to your show will know the answer, and they'll probably be like, "He's stupid."
Yeah. Well, I don't know the answer.
Well, there you go.
So the host doesn't know the answer and you don't, so that means that any...
Paul Kimball will know.
Yes. Paul will know. I don't know if he's listening. GoRightly says that Dodie must have retired really recently because he looked on a page for Grant's police department, and he was still on there a few months ago.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, let me see.
I love GoRightly's book about Happy Trails.
Yeah, Happy Trails of High Weirdness.
That is
that's
such
his
a good
that's
book.
His version of
Fear and Loathing.
No. Yeah, it's his version of It Defies Language. He just took a bunch of stuff that he wrote about, took the cream of it, and put it in there.
It's such an entertaining book.
Yeah,
I love that. He is an interesting dude, man. You guys have been friends for a long time, right?
Yeah, since 92 or 3 or something.
Oh, I'm so thankful for people like, you know, you guys who are actually putting these topics out there that are so interesting to
and he's
people like me.
He's got a lot more like wide net than I do.
Yeah. Well,
I've brought up the New Mexico State Police Grants New Mexico District 6 Gallup and Grants. Let's see. You can ask more questions. I'm just trying
I think he at one time I think he had a Facebook and I tried to Facebook friend him, but
who?
Doty.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't know if he still does.
Probably doesn't.
Here's one thing I want to say. Why do you think there's not much to get political, but such a lack of diversity in the UFO field? I mean,
yeah, that's you know what? I think
it is a white man's game, huh?
Yeah, I wrote about that once, and I'm not even a white man. I'm only half. So I don't really know what the.
Are you the most diverse?
Maybe.
I think you are.
Maybe. I mean, I don't really talk about it that much. My mother's Japanese, but I don't really, you know, after I left junior high and people stopped teasing me, I haven't really thought about it.
Yeah.
My friends aren't horribly diverse, but probably 3/4 of them are white.
Right, yeah.
It's just, that's how it ended up.
Yeah.
You know, I got some black friends, I got a bunch of Hispanic friends, and, you know, a few from other countries, but mostly it's white people.
Yeah.
Because that's how I grew up. That's the neighborhood I grew up in. I went to USC. That's still, I think,
mostly a very white school.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just the way it turned out. But I don't know. I'm trying to think. I believe I wrote about it once, but I don't really know what I said or remember what I said. So, probably because maybe there is the leisure time to be able to worry about this crap.
I mean,
instead of trying to figure out, you know, how I can pay the damn mortgage and right. How I can, you know, and it's, you don't get any like, you know, lower middle class UFO investigators either. It's usually people that are middle or upper middle and they have the time to be, you know, the kind of people that can do these kind of things.
It's indulgence. You know?
And it's an indulgence. So there's only a few people that make a living off of it. And also there's probably a subtle racism going on too, where it's like, what if a black woman got up and started talking about it? You think she'd be invited to UFO conferences?
Well,
probably not, unless it was something that was just so mind-bendingly amazing.
You know, I would love to ask you this because you were, you know, around.
Or a Chinese woman, for that matter, or anything, you know?
You were around the scene in the late 80s and the 90s, and what was I going to say? Shit. It seems like at least to me, like, it was really heavily dominated with, like, right-wing kind of, I mean, not only, you know, they were, like, politically right-wing, but just kind of really paranoid. I don't know. Didn't seem like it was a real right-wing leaning in, like, the kind of the 80s.
Well, it always has been.
Yeah, with the not trusting the government and, like, you know. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's always been. I think to me, it's always been like that. It kind of still is.
Yeah, right. It doesn't seem like it's a ufology is not a bastion of liberalism.
No, it isn't. You know, and there's a few. I think I lean liberal, but I don't really. I don't have a party affiliation myself.
Neither do I. But I would consider myself a fairly liberal guy. But
yeah, I would too. It's just the way my brain works.
I think I've told you about this before, and I would add a couple new names to it, but I've. So, like, you, Nick, Paul, Adam Gariley, Tim Banal, Micah are kind of like the punks of the UFO.
What people think?
That's what I think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, this is my own thing. And I think people who know would agree that you guys are kind of the outsiders to this, to the UFO establishment, if you want to call it like. But
I don't ever think about that. I'm just like, I'm concentrating on my thing.
I know.
I don't care whether I'm inside or outside or what. If somebody notices, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I get to meet and talk to people like you. And if they don't, I don't care.
Right. But as a
I like to be invited to things and to be invited to talk because I get a trip and I get to meet people. And, you know, that's nice.
Sure.
But
I bet a lot of the large UFO audiences don't want to hear a lot of the things you guys have to say. Or maybe they would find them interesting. But, like, you guys aren't necessarily saying, like, well, you know, the ETs that are, you know, an S4, you know, like, in or like, you know, talking about some Dan Burrish type of ridiculous stories.
I think that's changing really slowly, mainly because some of those people are getting old and dying off, and two, because people that are coming into it, they automatically don't want to do what the older people are doing, which is
great.
I would love that.
Oh,
in fact,
man.
If somebody comes in and they're young and they start spouting the same stuff, I'm like, what are you doing?
No, move on.
Did you do everything your parents told you?
Exactly.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah. You're listening to your parents' music, man.
don't do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I at one point, at some place, I said, I hope somebody comes up that says something that pisses me off.
Right.
You know, and I haven't heard anything yet. I don't think anybody can say anything that pisses me off unless it's willfully stupid or just looks back and says that that's the way we should go.
Right. That
irritates me. But anything else, I don't care what people say.
Yeah.
I could say, well, I just, you know, I'd really like to see some supporting either evidence or a very good argument. Other than that, I'm not offended by anything anybody says. I don't care. There might be something good in something somebody says that's totally insane.
Absolutely. Why not?
Which is, you know, it goes back to the thing where it's like, you know, why don't you trust these? I know why it came up, because I was a co-host and we interviewed Erica Lukes, who was the head of Utah MUFON, but she resigned. She's still in MUFON, but she's not the state section director. And she mentioned Butch Witkowski, who I don't know a lot about him, but apparently he's, you know, some of his research has been questioned. His
they're
background.
They're giving him the Imbrogno treatment, it seems like. Yeah.
Yeah. So when she said Butch Witkowski had helped her, Gene said, wait a second. Why are you talking to this person? You know, this guy, as far as I'm concerned, has been discredited. She goes, well, he's helped me a lot. And, you know, she kind of backed off of it. And then in the after the Paracast, they said, you know, Chris said, what do you think of these people who have been discredited? And I said, I don't care.
Yeah.
I said, one, I don't care. And two, if I'm going to use them as a resource and something like, you know, I don't know if I'd write a book with them. Because
right.
I didn't, when I hear the, like I said later in the show, he goes, why don't you point out these people? I said, because I don't want to hear the shit storm that comes back at me. It's just not worth my time to hear all the, to have all the emails running in. It's like, why are you saying bad things about it? It's like, I've had that a couple times and I don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
And like I said, these people are not killing babies.
Right. I mean, they're,
they're not killing babies or making weapons or, you know. Or
chill out.
Yeah. So it's not that important to me to point it out, but they said, you know, why do you, Gene said, why would you mention his name and, you know, trust him or work with him? And she said, because he's been nice to me and he's given me, you know, good information to help me out a lot. So I was saying, you know, maybe if I, you know, what if I was working with Butch Witkowski? If he said something to me or gave me some information that checked out, I'd use it. I wouldn't say Butch is my co-author and he's wonderful. And I'd just say, that's good information. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
I'm not going to champion him.
Like Phil Imbrogno, he had some good information.
Yeah, that's what I said
research.
That about Phil Imbrogno, and they were kind of flabbergasted that I would even pay any attention to the person after he'd been caught lying about his background, lying about his, you know, academic credentials and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, you could have lied about anything. It's like, but, you know, you say that nobody says anything about John Keel.
Exactly. Or like, what about Richard Dolan, who was kind of not backing the Roswell slides, but he went, you know, and even though, like, I think we had talked about our lunch, I would have taken the free trip too. But,
yeah,
I don't throw away Dolan's research. He's done a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I don't agree with Dolan.
Yeah.
I think he's gotten to the point where the thing that he's into gives him tunnel vision on the thing he's into.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he's full of crap, that he's dishonest, or that his research should be thrown away.
I agree. I think
in fact, one time said somebody got complained at him because he was apparently looking into or talking to somebody who was apparently some sort of a contactee. He was saying, this seems kind of interesting. People are like, why are you even getting involved with that asshole? And I actually came to his defense, and I said, what do you care what Richard Dolan is looking into? Who cares if he's interested in this? What if there is something interesting here? You know, so, you know, why are you getting so excited? And Rich actually wrote me and said, thanks so much. I mean, nobody nobody else actually, you know, defended me in that situation. I was like, well, it's not that important.
But it's a question that's not even in a very intelligent argument.
Yeah.
It's, okay, well, so I'm just going to throw out all this, even if there's one nugget of information.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I would venture exactly. to guess that a lot of these people in this field have some questionable yeah. things they've done. So, you know.
Yeah, the guy has a capacity to, you know, I don't agree with him, but he has the capacity. He's an intelligent person. He has the capacity to be civilized and, you know, carry on a civilized conversation,
yeah.
which is and listen to you.
Yeah.
And say, oh, well, that makes sense. I don't totally agree with you. Instead of getting all emotionally involved with it, at least in my experience. I had right. him on the show, and I actually upset him a little bit.
Did you really? Now,
when I was talking about, you know, the ETH and how that is no, it's, you know, maybe we shouldn't look at that anymore, and it seems like a tired old thing. Let's look at other things. And I also said, the thing that upset him, actually, was I said, do you think that UFO researchers should watch out that they become, you know, could turn into the person that is feeding their audience, which would affect their judgment a bit.
Right.
And I think he got the message that I was saying, warning him about that. It's like, don't get too much into your own stuff or your filters might start not working so well anymore. And he got upset about that. Yet, after the show was over, the next day we were talking and fine and everything. He doesn't care.
Right. Well, that's good. Good. You know? I mean, like,
he didn't take it personally. At least he didn't take it personally for more than 5 minutes. I started yelling at Chris on the show. It's like, I was pissed when I was saying that stuff, but then I was finished. After the show, he goes, well, you're my hero. You know, you're one of my heroes.
Right.
I love your research and the way you think. And, you know, I hope you didn't take it personally. You're angry. I said, I was angry for 5 minutes while we were talking. I'm fine now. I don't care. It's a disagreement.
It's a debate. It's a interesting debate. Your audience loves it. I guarantee it. You know, it's like, and if you get questioned, great. Who can, yeah. You know, like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You're having a discourse here. Yeah. So.
And I defended myself, and I think I got a little emotional, which I shouldn't have, but I don't often.
Yeah.
I was actually checking the forums today just to see if it was like, God, Greg got so upset.
Really?
Because I did. I raised my voice, which I don't often.
I know I've heard the episode. I don't remember that, though.
No. This is
you're
on the
a real
after the,
chill guy. You
yeah,
know?
This was on the After the Paracast that was recorded like 3 days ago.
Oh.
Friday.
Okay, I missed that.
Two days ago.
I subscribed to that for a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to, I mean, they have some good guests sometimes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they do.
I cannot listen to it with the commercials. It's.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've never heard it with the commercials. I don't even know what the commercials sound like.
It's more commercial than its show.
Oh, okay. And I hardly ever. I never listen to other people's shows, almost never.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of sorry about that, but also it's like I'm not horribly interested. Like if Valet is on, okay, yeah. I'm going to listen to that. Or, you know, I think I'm going to try and get David Weatherly on sometime.
Ooh,
I met him in Arizona, him and his wife. We got along great. Uh-huh. I found out we have some of the same, you know, complaints about, you know, researchers and things. We have some of the same ideas about how the way things should go. I'm going to finish reading his Black Eyed Children book and have him on.
Let me look through my little question bank. I know one.
I'm waiting for somebody to say that they think I'm a horrible, terrible person and that I lie and cheat. And it's like, good, because I think of my reputation, nobody will listen to that yeah. person.
Well, you know, asshole it up a little bit.
Yeah. Now, I can't be who I'm not.
Why? It's too hard. It takes too much energy.
When I was raised my voice with Chris and Gene the other day, that was me, but I don't often get pushed to there.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is that, not specifically Chris, but some people, not just in the UFO field, but in general, it's like, if you don't push a boundary back, they'll keep pushing it at you.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to, like, it's like a dog. You have a dog that's barking at you. You have to like, smack it or something so it backs off.
Yeah, I mean, it's
or
also,
yell at it or something. Otherwise, it just thinks it can mess with you.
It also makes the conversation that people are listening to, because it is a show, more interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Because if you just sit there and go, oh, okay, I'm just going to like cower in the corner and let them berate me. No.
I would never do that.
No, you wouldn't.
Like people say, well, you never argue with anybody.
Yeah.
It's like, because it's usually not worth it.
Well,
but if somebody calls me out and says, why aren't you doing this? Well, you know, if you're not for us, you're against. It's like, that is not my philosophy, and I'm going to tell you exactly why.
Yeah. Well, your show, one thing I love about it is it's not – there's plenty of debate and, you know, thought experiments and stuff like that. But there's never – it's not an arguing. It's not my points more valid than yours.
No, and, never. Never.
Which is – but I find that in a lot of shows, which really turns me off.
Yeah.
Because it's – it's just going round and around. Yeah. I'm not learning anything. I'm getting discouraged. I'm like, this is
you know what I said on that show with Erica, which I actually kind of had fun doing. At a certain point, I said, I notice if I'm getting emotional about a viewpoint of mine, there's something wrong with that viewpoint because it means that I'm not sure of it.
Yeah.
That it's not, that's an emotional viewpoint and it's not something that's backed up by enough facts or thought or whatever it is to hold up that opinion.
Right.
And if I get emotional, I probably shouldn't be holding that. I should probably examine why I have that opinion.
Right. Because maybe you're not as grounded in that opinion yet.
Exactly.
And you're like, well, maybe I have some more research to do.
Right.
Maybe
exactly.
I'm not confident in it.
And if somebody questions something I said, I don't have any answer, I go, I don't have an answer for that.
Right.
I'm going to have to back off this a little bit and either drop it or go back and find something that holds up my end of the argument.
And
but but if I have to go get really upset and heat it up with people, there's something wrong there.
Let me tell you, I most of my friends are comedians and highly skeptical people. So they love to pick on me because even though I'm more skeptical than most of them, which is the funny part.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, you like, you UFOs and ET. And like,
we're not going to be fooled by that.
So for a while, I was always like, no, I don't necessarily believe aliens from another planet are coming here. But I think there's something that has perhaps been flying around in the sky for thousands of years that we don't understand.
Yeah.
And they're like, but you believe in aliens. I'm like, okay, we're just not,
A whole bunch of people, including me, wrote about this like 10 years ago. When you're Regan Lee wrote about this. It's like when you're saying, do you believe in UFOs? You're saying, do you believe in aliens are coming here in structured ships from other planets?
Yes.
That's what people are asking.
Still.
And that's the only debate. Do you believe there's aliens coming here from other planets in structured craft or do you not? Because it takes too much time to think about.
My new response is I don't even believe that I'm necessarily here right now. So, I mean,
mine has become, it's a lot more subtle than that if you want to get into it. If not, whatever.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to discuss it with you because, my argument is I believe that there is something that's not human that interacts with us occasionally. That is my belief, which is open to debate and amendment.
Absolutely.
So, and most people accept that. If they're not totally stupid, they accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do, and then they also get disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want to know where you're coming from so I can say you're either full of crap or I totally agree with you.
And then, like,
five minutes, I can get my emotional
and
whatever.
And then a lot of times when, like, the green room in the comedy club, like, empties out and one person will go, like, so I did see someone when I was 8 years old. Like, you idiot.
Yeah, what do they think of Rogan? I think he totally believes it. Or has he changed?
He was a big Bigfoot guy for a while, I know, but now he's off Bigfoot. Doesn't believe it's out there.
Oh, okay.
But I think he is into...
What's cool is that he allows the information to change his mind. That's a sign of intelligence.
And
I think he's really funny.
I actually came to him kind of late. I thought he was just kind of like this tough guy, bro, like UFC. Now, I judged him.
That's his character. But if you see his stand-up, that is not what he is.
And even his podcast, which is really interesting.
I've heard a couple
of
them.
And like, he's all over the map. It's not just, weird. It's he's all over the place.
And he does them stoned out of his mind, apparently.
So, I mean, he smokes massive amounts of marijuana, which every comedian does. But
yeah, to quiet the demons.
To quiet the demons. Numb my brain. it's weed is a big tool in the comedy world.
Yes. In fact, I saw Rogan in 2001 at the Comedy Store because I'm this horrible name dropping. Kevin Booth, I had interviewed. You know who Kevin Booth is,
no,
right?
No, I don't.
Bill Hicks' best friend. He was his producer. I think he lives in L.A. now, and he's kind of ensconced in sort of in the entertainment industry.
Okay.
But in 2001, he was just coming here from Austin, and I happened to be working on Conspiracy Zone at that time. And I had just interviewed him. I wish I could find the article. I wrote an article for Miles Lewis's Austin Paratimes, which was a print newspaper in Austin at the time. And it was basically about what happened the night Bill Hicks said he went on a UFO when he was on mushrooms.
Right. I love that story.
And Booth was with him when this happened. And he's the one he's talking about. He says, my friend and I said we went in and we weren't even next to each other and we both had the same experience. And, he doesn't go into it specifically in the bit, but he had talked about it, so I knew this was what was going on. So I got Booth's phone number, and I called him up, and I interviewed him for like 2 hours about it.
Wow, cool.
And when he came out to L.A., I was working on the show, and he said, "Yeah." I said, "We're having a rap party for season one. You want to come out? It's like a little bar. Kevin Nealon will be there. I can introduce you if you want to talk to him." And
right.
So, you know, at that time, that wasn't, you know, to him, that was an amazing thing. So after that, he said, "Look, I am." I think he was helping. He was like a producer or an agent or something for a few people, including. No, I can't remember his name. Doug Stanhope.
Oh, I love Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, and a few other people. And he said, Stanhope's going to be at the Comedy Store tonight, and some guy named Joe Rogan, and why didn't you come down? I'll leave your name at the door.
Great.
So I did. I saw Joe Rogan. I had a headache afterwards because it was so damn... And it was in that, the belly...
Oh, the belly room.
Yeah.
That's a small, intimate room, too. Yeah. Wow, I love that room.
Yeah. So after it was over, they said... And I didn't know about this. Apparently, the parking lot is where they don't have a green room or anything. All the comedians go and hang out in the parking lot.
That's where they smoke weed.
Yeah. So we go out there, and Rogan and I, and I've said this on the show before, he introduced me to Rogan. I gave him a copy of Wake Up Down There.
Nice. I bet he loved it.
I had never heard from him again, but for 10 minutes, Kevin Booth turned on a video camera, and Joe Rogan and I yelled at each other for 10 minutes. Not because we were arguing. It's just because that's how Rogan talks.
He yelled talks.
Yeah, he yelled talks. So I yelled talk back at him. And I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel right. Like he was yelling at me. I was like, okay, I guess the conversation takes place at this volume with Joe Rogan.
I will rise to the occasion. Yeah.
And while we're doing this, Charles Fleischer walks over, and he sells Joe Rogan at some...
That's amazing.
He said, "I've got a Whitman sampler for you," which is apparently a dime bag, and that's what they were calling him at the time.
A Whitman sampler?
Yes. I will remember that as long as I live. It was wonderful.
That's a great story, man. Yeah, his show's good. You know, it's interesting. It's really long. It's like, you know, 3.5 hours long sometimes, but it's interesting. Yeah, it's good.
The last time I went to the Comedy Store, and Go Rightly went too. He came down to L.A. to see it. I went and saw Tony Clifton.
I've never seen Tony Clifton. That is a huge gap.
Yeah.
Was it unreal?
Yes.
I mean.
Because there was okay, it's 9:30. I'll open up the phone here in a minute. I was going to sign on to Skype. But 3 or 4 years ago, there was an Andy Kaufman tribute at the Silent Movie Theater.
Yeah.
Did you go to that?
No, I remember it, though.
And I don't know if anybody knew this beforehand, but Zamuda showed up.
Jesus.
In the first, he came out and talked. He said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, Andy and I messed with people, and it was wonderful." And then they showed a few more things, and then he runs out on stage with, like, strippers, and he starts doing his act. And I was like,
oh, my God.
Oh, my God, it's Andy Clifton! And everybody there knew what the deal was. He started telling racist jokes, sexist jokes, all the stuff that he does.
Yeah.
And people loved it.
Oh, my God.
I loved it. And people, you know, and this is the part of comedy that really a lot of people don't understand. The fact that you can laugh at those jokes and be able to, you know, get... to realize that part of you still think that's funny and acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Even though you don't act on it, you don't feel like that with people, you don't, you know. It's just, it's funny that anybody could even say something so outrageous at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that is going away, though, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like, Tony Clifton, that's the end of that era. Like,
yes.
That kind of comedy, it's done. I have a lot of stand-up comedy friends who tour, and they're really well-known guys, and they keep on, like, joking around that we're going to have to start giving our material to whatever club. And they're going to say, you can't do this joke, not PC enough. And a lot of them have stopped.
But that's what comedy is for.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
It's to laugh at idiots who believe idiotic things and to satirize them. And to actually, like...
Yeah, the other thing we were laughing at there was to laugh at the people that would seriously think that shit was funny.
I mean... Yeah.
But half the joke was, I can't believe he's saying this.
Yes, it's shocking.
Yeah.
But it's actually, like, I look at that and think...
They wouldn't have told those jokes in the 70s in a comedy club. Part of his act is to tell it in front of a big audience.
Right. Yeah. Donald Rickles still does it.
Yeah.
But we're not going to have him a whole lot longer.
Right.
I saw him, and it was unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, like, Tony Clifton, the comedy he's doing is actually very intelligent.
Microphone.
It's really smart comedy.
Yes, it is.
People are like, oh, it's just like, you know, he's just telling like off-color jokes and trying to get a reaction.
Nope.
Not really. Nope. It's more nuanced than that.
Yep, much.
That's
and
great
when I was at the comedy store, I bootlegged it.
Did you really?
You want to hear part of it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Here's a few minutes, a couple minutes here.
This is a rare treat, people.
Yeah. This is something you won't hear anywhere else.
Try to rain on my parade. A coffin trying to ride my coattail. No, on the way here, some fucking reporter out here. It's true. I'm walking up, and he says, if Andy Kaufman was alive today, what would he be doing? You know what he'd be doing? Scratching on the inside of his casket.
Great crowd. Let's hear from you. Yes. Oh, yeah, okay, here's a little bit more. I just put a couple of sections on here. Yeah, he was singing I Will Survive.
Was the classic thing he did. I can't believe you saw that.
Yeah.
Feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry. Now I hold my head up on him. You see me. Somebody did. I'm not that kind of a little person. So I love you. So we thought you just walk in and expect me to be free. When I'm saving all my love for someone who's loving me. I'm not that good.
There's a little bit of dialogue at the end here too, which he gives away what he's doing in the act. He just kind of explains it in character.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just wanted a little bit of the music in here. It's only like a minute of music. The live band.
It's it kind of makes me emotional, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So I've seen him twice now. Okay, I faded it, and I put this one little piece of dialogue in at the end, I think.
And I'm able to say and do the things I do because of a thing called the First Amendment.
Wow.
Right? It's the right to say whatever you fucking want. You know, and there's a lot of this political correctness bullshit that has to stop.
Yeah!
And after that, they start that, and the next thing is burning.
Yeah.
The books, I'm telling you. Anyway.
Yep, there's Tony
Clifton. Wow, that's amazing, man. What year was that?
2010, it looks like.
Oof. Man, I would like to see that.
Yeah, 6 years ago. So, actually, I am sorry, sort of, that we're not talking about UFO stuff totally, but the fact that Steve works in the industry and also works in comedy... I knew he would want to talk about you know, what it is, what people can say, what they can't, what comedy is for.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, it's like, it's the court jester. It's always there going, look at this BS.
It's supposed to
everybody's going
to
laugh, but they know that the, you know.
It's supposed to be medicinal for all the crazy shit that's happening. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah, like Larry, what's his name, at the correspondence dinner the other night. Did you see that?
That was such a funny correspondence dinner. It really was good.
Yeah.
Obama was really funny, too.
Yeah, he was.
I thought the Helen Mirren comment was amazing. Helen Mirren's here. That's just cool.
I saw a little bit of Obama. I watched all of the Larry, what's his name?
Wilmore?
Yeah, I think it's Whitmore.
Whitmore.
Yeah, I watched all of that. And I loved everybody just kind of looking at the floor. Like,
what do we do?
Are we supposed to laugh? Yeah. It was like they were having a comedy roast of everybody there.
But did you hear that the White House, like 2 days later, said like they like sanctioned his act, basically saying like it was okay what he did, but they waited 2 days like to come out and they had to like
release.
That's
okay. They actually, you know, the administration actually said they were okay
exactly.
with it. Exactly. You know.
Oh.
So excellent.
Yeah, it's a dangerous, it's a weird time for comedy, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Not particularly fun.
What were you saying, that people have to get, do they have to get stuff approved yet?
No, I don't think that's happening yet, but it's you know, some of my friends started talking about it like a couple of years ago, joking about it, and now they're like, it's actually, because with colleges, you do have to kind of submit your material.
Oh.
Because they are the most PC. And like they say there's no laughter. It's just a bunch of like intakes of air, you know, like sharp intakes of air of disapprovement, you know.
I don't know if I feel like an old person when I'm thinking, it's like, what the hell is wrong? What, you can't laugh? If you can't laugh, that to me, like just like Tony Clifton said, that's the beginning of
the end. The world's over. I mean,
yeah, like, at least this country.
Yeah,
where you can't laugh at stuff.
It's a where can
there? Yeah, why should there ever be a line about? Did you see the Triumph the Insult Comic Dog when he went to the college and?
No, and I love Triumph.
Yeah, what's his name?
Smigel.
Yeah,
Robert Smigel.
Robert Smigel. Yeah. Smigel. He they went to a college. They said, well, you know, had all these kids, and I think they were serious, these college-age students, and he, I can't do it justice. You see, I have to watch it. It's the Triumph the Insult Comic Dogs, you know, 2016 election special.
Right.
he had a slightly overweight, probably gay acting black dude come in and talk to them for a few seconds, and then he left, and then Triumph said, so, how would you describe this man? Oh, he is of size. They're all trying to say all this stuff, trying to not sound wrong. And he just keeps teasing him and messing with him about it and just gives it to him. It's like, he just makes merciless fun of them for being this way. And there's one girl that's kind of cute that's sitting in the front. And he keeps making sex jokes about her. She's getting all and all uptight about it. It's like, wow.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be on a podcast, like a comedy podcast every once in a while. And I feel like I need to be careful just for like what I do for a living to not like hurt my career.
Yeah.
I need to like kind of watch myself on some of my opinions, or like,
that means the communists have won.
I mean, it does. In that I'm actually I have to worry about that, you know, and I shouldn't.
Secret
have
to, police yeah, are listening.
Yeah, but I need the work because I don't know how to do anything else.
Yeah, so
I have to kind of play the game.
I think I have the Skype on. If anybody wants to call in and yell at, more questions?
Well, let me,
because we can go late. I don't care.
Okay, great. Yeah, let me. Let me look at my little question bank. Sorry.
See, no reason to be.
We've covered a lot of these as.
Steve said he was all nervous. I was like, why?
Yeah, you know, this is outside of my. Well, I've never done this. Okay, and I know I've asked you about this before, but I want to put this question out there into the ether. I am so fascinated with Armin Viktorian. I think
I don't know a lot about him. Goretti might know more about him.
But, you know, he was the guy. He, you know, interviewed, like, Ed Dames.
Right.
Robert Pandolfi and like
Ron Pandolfi
or Ron Pandolfi. Yeah. And, you know, he was an orchid smuggler. I mean, like, what an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And then poof, he's gone.
He's still around, I think.
He is.
I think.
Is he like more into the PSYOP stuff, or I mean,
I don't know what he's doing now. In fact, you know who does know probably what he's doing more than me, far more, is Pilkington, because he's British. Victorian is British.
Who's
at least
the other
he's
guy?
A British
I actually
subject.
Corresponded with not Pilkington, Lundberg.
John,
I wrote him an email and he was really nice. He wrote me right back because I was like, I'm so fascinated. I know you did that mini doc called The Mythologist. That's how I got interested in him.
Oh, see, I haven't seen that one.
He
was the producer on Mirage Man.
Yeah, and he came.
Him and Pilkington were co-producers.
Because I asked him, I go, look, I would love to purchase a copy of this, or how can I see it? And he's like, I can't get it. The BBC owns it, and they won't release it to me.
Oh, that's right. You told me
so
this.
So he was pissed about it, too. He's like, you should write them, man, and, like, ask for it, but.
Why, is he in there? Is it about him?
It's about Armin Victorian.
Oh, man. Because they were talking about him a lot while we were working on Mirage Man.
Oh, great.
So they must have been thinking about doing, or they had done
There's
it
There's like
something.
A web page called The Mythologist, and it has some material about him, and they show little clips, little trailers of the doc, and it looks so good.
Ugh. But, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, so that was, here's a question. I know you lived in Topanga Canyon in the 90s.
Yep.
Am I right about that?
Yeah, from late 80s, early 90s, like 87, 88 to like 91.
So were you there during the Topanga Canyon flap? No, you missed it.
I missed it by like a month.
But you were out in L.A. You were like an L.A. guy. Was there a lot of hubbub about that?
No, nobody said a word.
Really?
Nobody said really anything. It was so totally localized. And then the Topanga Canyon paper, after it had been going on for a couple of years, had a feature on it. I remember seeing it, and I didn't save it. Or if I did, it's in all my papers somewhere.
Oh, man.
They went and talked to all these people in the canyon that had had these weird experiences and seen things floating up the canyon and had weird animals running around on the road late at night. And I didn't see any of that stuff. I used to ride my bike when my car broke down. You know where Topanga is.
Sure, I love Topanga.
I rode my bike from the airport to Topanga Canyon.
If you don't know that, folks, that's about a day's bike ride. That's so far.
I would ride up. I would leave work right next to LAX on Century, and I would ride there in the afternoon in the traffic because my car broke down.
That's like a six-hour bike ride. Am I right? I mean, like,
it's more like two or three, something like that. Downhill, I mean, going there was fine because I came down to Topanga Canyon. Then at 1, 2 in the morning, I would leave from the airport and ride my bike, you kids, back up through Santa Monica, up PCH, and up to Topanga Canyon at 2 in the morning.
That is scary, man.
I don't know
what's
wrong.
Especially on the PCH.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm not dead. Maybe I am in an alternate universe.
Like Kelsey Grammer all coked out driving on the PCH.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I could have been hit by him or Mel Gibson or something. But I never saw anything weird.
Oh, man.
And I was riding up that canyon with no traffic and nobody and no nothing at 2 in the morning. 3, 4 in the morning.
And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like doesn't Topanga Canyon have a rich, I mean, maybe paranormal is not the right word, but a rich. I know, like, the New Age movement was, like, big there in the 80s.
Yeah.
But does it have kind of, like, a rich, is it, like, a hot spot, I guess?
I think it has been, yeah. The Manson family was there for a while.
They were?
Yeah, there was a house at the bottom of Topanga Canyon right off PCH. I think it was called the Staircase House or the Spiral Staircase House. Go Rightly knows more about it. A lot of people know more about it than me. I've forgotten. But, yeah, and then the first murderer they were involved with was in Topanga Canyon on Old Topanga Canyon Road. It was what was the guy's name? Go Rightly will probably write in and tell me. But that was the first murder there really people really knew about that they were connected with.
Wow!
They got burned in a drug deal or something. And they like tortured and murdered this guy.
Jesus.
Hinman? No.
And then they moved to the Santa Susana Pass area after that.
Yeah, and then they moved to Death Valley after the Tate and LaBianca.
Is Death Valley in the Santa Susana Pass area?
No, Death Valley is Death Valley. It's way out in the desert.
Where is that? Is that by towards Vegas?
Yes. You go to Baker and you stop with the giant
The thermometer thing?
The giant thermometer and the bun boy. There is a road that goes north from there. If you drive on it for like an hour and a half or so, you get to Death Valley.
Oh, okay.
It's way the hell out there.
Is that where they had the moving rocks? That was in, I think you wrote about that in Weird California.
That was solved.
It was?
Yeah.
Well, tell me.
Do you want to cliffhanger it so I can go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
How about I've got a little bit of John Mulaney talking about bad words.
Okay, here we go.
So let's play that.
A great comedian.
Yeah, and I will use the bathroom. I'll come right back, and I'll tell you about what happened with the Moving Rocks.
It's wrong to make fun of people, you know, but it's so fun sometimes. I've written for some TV shows, and, you know, on a major TV show, you have to be careful about what you say about people because a lot of people can get offended, or so it has been explained to me. I was once, I'll tell you this, I was writing for an awards show once, and I got into some trouble. I wrote a joke for this awards show that had the word midget in it, and someone from the network came down to our offices, and he said to me, "Hey, you can't put the word midget on TV." And I said, "I sure would like to." And he said, "No, midget is as bad as the N-word." First off, no. No, it's not. "Do you know how I know it's not?" I said to him. "Is because we're saying the word midget, and we're not even saying what the N-word is. If you're comparing the badness of two words, and you won't even say one of them, that's the worst word." Also, I don't mean to gloss over what, like, little people have been through in this country, but you cannot compare the plight of midgets to African Americans. That is outrageous. Midgets were never enslaved, unless you count the Wonka factory. So we get into this argument, we're going back and forth. He goes, "You can't put that word on TV." And I said, "I want to." And he goes, "If you put that word on TV, there could be a protest of midgets on this building." And I said, "Promise?" How tempting would that be?
That's amazing.
That was relevant. Moving Rocks. Scripps Institute of Oceanography, I don't know why they did it, went out there. They set up, somebody is, Gary Hinman. There, yeah, I was right.
Oh, that was the drug bust gone wrong?
Yeah, or the drug casualty deal gone wrong. Yeah. Thank you, Go Rightly. They went out there, and I don't know, I guess other people had done this, but it has to be just the right conditions. What happens is it rains occasionally, and there's water in that dry lake bed, which is why it looks like it's cracked mud, okay, because basically sure, it turns into mud every once in a while. And in the winter and at night, there will be sheets of ice that freeze over the top of the... I have to explain this to a bunch of kids at an elementary school on Thursday.
Wow. Are you really? Oh, cool, man. Yeah.
Every year I lecture at an elementary school out near Palm Springs.
That's awesome.
To like 600 fifth graders.
No way. Yeah. I bet they love it.
Yeah, they go nuts. It's the only book they can get them to read, apparently, or one of the few.
That's all the kind of stuff I wanted to read as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Because it tells them that things aren't what everybody says they are, which is exactly what kids need to hear.
And that's exciting.
But what I was going to tell them is like, look, this was a mystery. It is no longer a mystery. They went out there and they found out that every once in a while it rains, it gets cold at night, the water freezes. It freezes in these big sheets and the rocks are, you know, there's mud and then the rocks are kind of trapped with these big sheets of ice.
Right.
And so in the morning, the sun comes up and the ice starts to melt a little bit. So they're not really thick. They're like, you know, maybe a quarter inch thick sheet of ice. They break up into these huge 20, 30, 100 yards across sheets of ice. And at that point, the slightest little breeze can start moving them around. And the rocks are trapped. And they've got photographic evidence of this. The rocks are trapped in these sheets of ice. And as the sheets move, they move at like you could walk very slowly at the rate they're moving. And it drags the rocks along the mud along the bottom until the ice breaks up and melts, and then they stop.
Oh, my God.
And they have time-lapse pictures showing this happening. In fact, if you go to if you do a search on it, you can see they have a little time-lapse thing where you can see the rock going along.
No way.
Trapped in the sheet of ice. And they took rocks, and they drilled holes in them, and they put GPS monitors in them so they could see when and where they moved. So they have all this, you know, by a combination of photography and seeing, you know, where the rocks move, when they moved, and how far, they figured out it was the ice.
No way. I had no idea.
Yeah. Case big sheets closed. Of ice. Yeah. You know, one guy actually online said, "I'm actually kind of sorry they solved it."
Yeah,
I am too. But the thing is that you know, all the evidence I looked at, it's like that makes total sense.
It does make sense.
I mean, and they got the photographic evidence to show you. They've got video of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and it's a Scripps Institute, and they faked everything just to make
It's a conspiracy. They want you to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. This is more fodder for your show. Yeah,
exactly. I do have a question.
Keep going.
The zine scene.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, I was really into like punk and like underground stuff, and I would read a lot of punk zines that were like kind of local and like Midwest.
Who didn't? That wasn't worth anything.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
The zine scene that you were kind of a part of.
Early 90s up to, like, I started in 91. We did, and then it's about
91.
Huh?
Excluded Middle started in 91?
Yeah, December of 91.
Wow. Did that sort of, was it inspired out of the punk scene?
No, I just wanted to, my friends and I said, God, all these magazines suck.
Right.
Why don't we do one? I mean, that was the whole genesis of it. We weren't seeing the kind of stuff that we wanted to find out about. It's like, well, let's just go out and ask people ourselves and put our own magazine together. So we did.
Well, because to me, like, Excluded Mill feels kind of like a punk zine in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
It's just that I tried to make it look nice.
Exactly. It looked nice. But, I mean, there's also, like, more interesting articles and it's more diverse.
I think there was a punk spirit in it because I came right out of that, too. I was all not. I liked the punk thing. It wasn't the only thing I was into. I mean,
right.
I like Zeppelin and The Who and all that stuff. And
totally.
Then when the Ramones and Black Flag and all that came out, I was into that too.
Yeah.
I was a little later than other people. It took me about 2 or 3 years.
Right.
But yeah, that was like late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. So in the early 90s, I mean, I still had that DIY punk, you know.
Never leaves you.
Old people are wrong. Which anybody worth anything should have.
Like I think we so too.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I grew up loving those things. My little punk record store would have like these local zines that were fascinating.
I would go to the newsstand and find all these little things, or Tower Records had them.
Really?
They were buying zines for a while.
Oh man! Well, they probably weren't that hard to get in L.A. I was living in Omaha, Nebraska. So
it was a lot harder.
You know, it was a lot harder, but you could, you know, if you knew how
because,
to do it.
Because what is it? God, I had like a couple distributors. I can't. One of them was in L.A. Ingram. I'm not sure if they distributed, but. God, I can't remember the name of the distributors. There were two or three distributors that were national,
mm-hmm.
and they would go to all these little bookstores and record stores and all that. That's where people saw these things.
Right.
Was because of these tiny little distributors that had national reach. I remember I had two or three of them, and I'd always have to bug them to pay me to send me a check for what it sold. And, you know, they were good about it. They would send the check. You just have to bug them sometimes.
Right.
Anyway, but that's how it got into hands of all these, you know, into the hands of people in all these little towns and all over the country. I don't know about the world. I think some of them went to England. I got letters from England and Australia, which was amazing.
Did with the proliferation of the internet, is that when the zine scene started to go away? I mean, like, well, I'm so naive. There might be a thriving zine scene now that I just don't know about. But
the internet killed it.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, Steve Ray has got a question for the guest. There's
Ooh.
Quite a few things here.
Okay.
Do you think there might be a cultural thread running from George Carlin's routine about the most people are stupid and are full of shit and fucking nuts into the Paracast expectation that all good researchers must publicly announce wrong theorists, also to the politically correct expectation that all good people must denounce wrong ideas?
Ooh, wow.
Steve's a Sharpie.
Yeah, that's a... unbelievable question. I'd have to say, yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, but I hadn't either, but it's...
Yes,
it's,
I think he's right on, man.
I don't know if I'd put the Paracast in there. That's not a politically correct thing. Gene and, to a lesser extent, Chris, are interested in clearing the field out of, you know, wrong thinking and charlatans and people that are lying and all that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's their job. It's just not mine. I wasn't putting them down for it.
Right.
I was saying, this is not my job, and I don't want to be part of it. Well, and Chris, in particular, was saying, if you're not... What I think he was saying was, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I cannot stand that kind of binary thinking.
It's just so cut
things.
And dry. It's just not like...
And Chris, if you hear this later, and if I'm taking you the wrong way, I'm sorry. But the thing is,
we
can't...
And I love you, Chris O'Brien.
We can't... And yes, and I love Chris O'Brien, and I'm a huge fan, and...
We had
a disagreement, and that's fine. But yeah, I think that's what their idea is, and I told them that is not my idea, not my job.
Here's something that...
And don't push me into it or force me into it or shame me for not doing it.
Don't shame me, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder where you stand on this, but... And I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get you in trouble, but... there's a couple shows and a couple like personalities in this field that kind of act like a badass about like... I'm going to expose this person because they're wrong and I don't like it. And it's kind of this badass, like, tough guy UFO stuff.
You know what? You know what?
So
yeah, you know what RPJ pointed out to me? He said, that's just exactly what the skeptical people that they hate are doing.
Absolutely. I was actually going to say the same thing. It's
the fundamentalist skeptic people that they hate are doing.
It's this tough guy kind of like, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm going to tell the world that you're wrong and here's why. You know, like,
yeah, it's a waste of time. It comes from ego.
I don't understand the time and effort. And like,
my big thing now is get ego out of this.
Yes, please.
Because it automatically shuts down your brain.
Yeah.
You're just like, this is my thing and this is my territory and this is what I'm doing and I don't care, you know, and I'm right. Nobody else is like, that's not, you know, that's just what the UFOs want you to think.
Exactly. Yeah. It's frustrating though. Yeah. Because, and UFO tough guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah, anything. Any tough guys. And like I said, I don't know if I'd throw Gene and Chris in with that specifically.
Yeah. I mean, I think
in Chris's case, he's just tired of BS.
Yeah.
He's just so sick of it. It's like, God, if I have to hear another idiot saying whatever it is.
And I hear that he's been in this for so long. Yeah. He must be so annoyed.
He is. And I understand his point of view. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, I won't.
Like Patton Oswalt said, he's like, I don't have to agree with you. I can acknowledge what you say.
Sure.
I just don't have to agree.
Yeah.
I don't have to honor it or agree with it. I can acknowledge it.
I'll listen to
you,
though.
I acknowledge Chris and Gene's point of view, and but I don't agree with it, and I don't want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And it's not something where I'm like a bang on the table. It's like, you assholes. It's like,
yeah,
that's as far as I'm going to take. It's an opinion.
Yeah. And also some of the, again, I won't name names, but when they're like, we ask the tough questions, you know, when we get him on there, this guest, we are going to put his feet to the fire. I'm like, all right, that's not very inviting. Like,
well, some people like that.
I mean, like, I like tough questions too.
I do too.
But not when they're like,
you know, who used to be real good at that was Art Bell. He would ask you a tough question, and I take this cue from Art Bell, too. I mean, he's still a hero of mine.
He's the greatest.
Yeah. You ask a tough question. You let the person answer. If they're going to hang themselves with the answer, that's fine. Also, if it gets a little contentious, you make your point, and you leave them an out.
Yeah. So smart.
You know? My point is that you're wrong on this. Explain to me why you're not. Well, that's a BS answer, but we will move. Thank you very much, and we'll move on.
Exactly.
You don't say that's a BS answer, but people listening will get the point that you think it's a BS answer.
Let them make up their own minds.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I've had that kind of stuff happen on my show, and people write in, and they put comments on. It's like, wow, how could he say something, or she, or whoever, say something like that? That's such a stupid. And it's like, well, I let them say what they wanted to say.
Exactly.
You know, I don't agree with them, and I just like doing it. I'm not going to have somebody on to tear them a new one. I just don't. I mean, I don't feel like doing that.
That's not entertaining,
yeah,
too.
What's entertaining to me is having somebody on that's smarter than me that teaches me something.
Right.
Or at least we have fun, or both.
I mean, like an example would be like when you,
my life is not conflict. It's having fun and keeping conflict to a minimum unless it's absolutely necessary.
Conflict's my least favorite thing in the world.
Mine too.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
I don't like it, but as I get older, I'm just kind of like, if I got to have a conflict with somebody to resolve the thing, I'll have the damn conflict.
Yeah.
I'm not going to back off of it.
No.
But I also realize that most conflicts are just BS and not really worth it. If it's worth it, I'll get into it.
Yep.
Most of the time, it's just not to me.
Yeah. The only time it feels worth it to me, because like I can take. I mean, like I've been booed on. You know, I've had things written about me in like articles where he was terrible in this thing, and it used to hurt my feelings, or comments on a Funny or Die video. You know, where they're so mean.
Yeah, yeah.
But after a while, I was like, I don't even read those. I don't even care. You know, like you have to get over.
Yeah,
that stuff.
By accident, I will read reviews sometimes. In fact, I'll read for like the first few weeks when something comes out. Well, the last time was 10 years ago. I was reading the reviews, and I was like, oh, my God. And then finally, I just figured, there's nothing I can do about this, so I don't care.
Yeah.
I care, I guess, but not enough to go back and look and get upset. The nastiest thing somebody said so far for Wake Up, It Defies Language, I got to read it verbatim. It's really funny. I was going to answer it. Then I realized it probably isn't really worth it to... And the person was generally being nice.
Right.
I was like, I like this book, but And he gave me 5 stars. So what am I going to do? Argue with somebody that gave me five stars?
That's as good as you can get.
Yeah. It was just such a weird comment. I was kind of like, what? Really? Yeah, now it says Kindle Unlimited. You can get It Defies Language for free. I'm like, no! But it's like, I think you pay like $10 a month and you get like unlimited books.
Oh, the subscription, sure.
Yeah.
My wife does it, I think.
The author does not, finally, reason applied to UFOs. This author does not go into a rational, unquestioning acceptance of UFO lore. Here, I don't read the reviews. Or pseudoscientific skepticism. Thank you. He does not grasp the nature of the intelligence behind the phenomenon.
Can he? But, because I want to talk to him.
Yeah. But he gets as close as an atheist could be expected to do. It's like, okay, I know where he's coming from. And I was going to say something like, you know, I never said I was an atheist. I don't even know if I am. I mean, there's something in the book about it, actually, yeah. What my feelings are about it.
I think you're pretty well-known agnostic.
I'm kind of agnostic. I think there's an intelligence to the universe that we have chosen to personify as something that looks like us.
Right.
Like, yeah. Robert Smigel's thing with the puppets. Did you ever see that on TV Funhouse?
Well, no.
You never saw TV Funhouse?
On SNL?
No, the show. I'm going to have to lend you
the show.
Yes. It had like 8 or 9.
I had no idea.
I will lend you the DVDs.
Okay.
It's my favorite show ever. Pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's Triumph and all these other animal puppets doing like crazy, nasty Smeagol stuff.
I don't know how
one of the episodes, they're all going to church to pray, and every church they go to, there's the animal they are crucified in the church. There's a turtle church, there's a lobster church, there's a dog church, and they all have turtles, lobsters, and dogs all crucified in front of them.
I mean,
it's an episode actually when one of the chicken's kids joins a cult, and it's a UFO cult, and there are all these little live yellow chicks.
Oh my god!
And they're all in this like arena, and a UFO comes and beams them all.
That's amazing.
And the rooster has like 800 kids because, you know, his hen wife, you know, just lays eggs and they all hatch, and he's got like 300 kids. But anyway, I could tell the guy was, you know, he's coming from either some kind of Judeo-Christian point of view, belief system. And I was going to say something like, I never said I was an atheist, and right. I'm sorry that, you know, if you don't agree with me. And it's like, the guy was being nice and he gave me 5 stars.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with him.
You leave that one alone, yeah.
He can say whatever he likes, and I don't agree with, but I respect his right to have that opinion. That's
absolutely
fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really not a nasty review at all, though.
No, it's not.
It's kind of a compliment in a weird way, I think.
It kind of is.
It's like, hey, this guy, he has this belief.
He knows exactly what he's talking about, except he doesn't quite get it completely. Okay, that's fine.
That's fine.
I agree. Not in the way he said it, but I agree with him. Yeah. I don't get it completely.
If you want to tear me down for my lack of belief in something, that I can take that. I'm not that offended by that.
Yeah.
Off what you were saying, are UFO cults dead? When's the last time you heard about a UFO cult?
I don't know. Well,
the Raelians, I guess, are probably still.
Yeah, and
doing
you know
their
what? The Aetherius Society here
in
LA, they're still going. You can go to their.
Have you ever been?
Yes, many times.
I've been scared to go.
Don't be scared. They're nice people.
Can I just walk right in, like tomorrow?
You can walk in, but if you just walk. The funny thing is that the guy that was head of the place for a while knew me, and he liked excluded middle, so he'd always like, hello. He's British. Hello, Greg. How are you? You know, and he talked to me about the latest UFO news because he was into it. But he happened to be the head, and it wasn't George King.
Yeah,
it was another guy. Alan Mosley was his name, and he's dead now.
No but relation.
No Mosley. No relation, and spelled without the E. It was Mosley, not Mosley, like Jim Mosley.
Someone should try to contact Jim Mosley through a Ouija board.
I think they should,
because if anyone would talk back, it'd probably be him.
Yeah. But you can go there you can look it up online, but if you go and dress in a blazer and dress nicely, because they're a church and they want you to dress nice for church, you can watch them charge the spiritual battery. And I've been there and seen them do it a bunch of times. And I saw George King come in and yell at everybody once when he was still alive, because they were all praying to this thing and putting their hand up to it.
Right.
They put it on a tripod, and you know, it's like this weird looking thing with little tubes coming out of it. And they're putting their hand up, and they're praying to it because they're charging it with prayer.
Oh,
it's a
fantastic.
Prayer about it's charged with prayer hours.
Oh yes.
And there's somebody sitting there taking notes about how strong the prayer is, so how much power has gone into the battery that they can beam up to the satellites and beam, you know, goodwill around the world.
Oh, great stuff.
And these people were praying to it, and George King walked out of like from the back of the stage somewhere in his nightshirt. And he told them to quiet down. He goes, "Don't yell at it like a lot of friggin' idiots." I remember he said, "It's probably because they were praying so loud that he couldn't sleep."
He's like, "What have I created?"
Yeah, he said, "I could charge that thing in 5 minutes, yeah. With less, all the." And he went up and he like grabbed this guy and he's like, put his hand there and he's like, "Don't have to be loud." And he went through the whole thing. And,
then he
finally left. And everybody's going, "Thank you, Master. Thank you." They're all bowing to him. And I was just sitting there with my mouth open.
I mean, how many members do you think they have?
I don't know. Probably 50 or worldwide, maybe a few hundred.
Excellent. And where is that located in L.A.?
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood.
On Afton Place. You know where that Gower Gulch little shopping mall is with the Denny's?
It's right by Gower Studios.
Yep.
No shit.
Yeah, on Afton Place, just south of Sunset, just west of Vine.
Wow. I'm going to go there. I'll report
back. Afton Place.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, just look at their website or find out when
they're... Do I have to call ahead and say, may I come visit, or...
If you're going to go there, it'd probably be better not to just show up.
Yeah. Okay. Because
they used to. I used to just show up, and Mosley was there, and he was real nice about it. Then later, I showed up one time, and they didn't know who I was, and I mentioned Mosley's name. I said, "Alan Mosley used to be here. We were friends for many years. He was the nicest person. I'm just bringing a friend here from out of town." And so then they let us in the front, vestibule, and they sold us little strange books that George King had written, and
excellent.
You can buy jewelry, and I bought a little like incense burner from them, and
I'm gonna spend all my money there, and I just know it.
One time I went because they played a rare recording of George King speaking at something or other, and I went and sat down in their church with a bunch of other people and listened to this recording for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Just sitting in a chair, trying not to go to sleep.
This is so boring.
It was kind of boring, but what it was? It was George King and George Adamski, I think, speaking to each other. I was like,
phenomenal.
I got to go down and hear this.
Oh,
so I did.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what they said, but it was just the fact that I could sit in the Aetherius Society building and listen to a recording of George Adamski and George King talking to each other.
That's good stuff right there.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're doing these days. My wife actually is on their mailing list.
Is she really?
I don't know why. Separately, she was on their mailing list before we met.
Really?
Yes.
Is she into these
She's
topics?
Not. She's just into the weirdness.
Right, yeah.
She's into weird belief systems and all
sure.
that. So, yeah, when I found that out, it's like, okay, I guess I better ask her to marry me.
She's the one.
Yeah.
Speaking of, other local gatherings, do you ever go to the UPARS? Have you ever been to a UPARS? You know what UPARS is?
Yes, I went.
It's the new MUFON because they were MUFON. And
yeah,
then
they were going to invite me to speak, and then it kind of fell apart. But, yeah, I've been to a couple of them.
Yeah.
I used to go to those all the time, and then I spoke at a few of them, and then I gave up because every time I'd go, it was just like, oh, God, this person's an idiot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
As I say every time, the Jacques Vallée, I was not learning anything anymore.
Right.
It's like, I've heard this 100 times, or this is totally stupid, and I don't really want to hear about it.
Yeah.
When Nick would come, I wouldn't even go see him speak. We would just hang out.
Yeah.
Greg, I'm in town for like 2 days.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go out drinking. All right, come and pick me up at 4 o'clock. I have to speak at 8. Okay.
I saw Nick speak, and he was great.
Yes.
I can't remember what book it was, but
yeah,
I saw Chris O'Brien as well. He was really good, but everyone else was not that great.
No, I mean, after a while, you get used to who you want to talk to. I mean, who you want to see speak, and that's usually almost nobody for me, and which means that if something good does happen, I probably won't notice it.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but we'll see.
I like that they do that stuff, though. I like that.
Yeah,
it's
no,
an option,
they should
know?
Still happen.
I think it's neat,
There was a UFO meetup group from the what are those? What's that site called? It does the meetups.
Isn't it just called meetup? It might be just
maybe it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had a UFO one, and I went to like three of them, and they were talking about, which aliens were here and what from what planet.
Oh, boy.
So I quietly bowed out. I didn't go anymore.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell anybody who I was or I'd written in anything. I just didn't want to make a big deal out of it. I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't. So every once in a while they'd start talking and I would speak up and everybody is like, what are you talking about? Of course they're here. And of course I'm like, okay, see you guys later.
What are you talking about? Of course they're here.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean,
that was the general attitude.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like, I'm learning nothing here. I don't want to speak at people. I don't want to change their belief system. I don't want to speak down to them or argue with them or anything. So I just said, oh, I'm not coming anymore. Sorry.
That's the smart way to do it. It's like, you know, it's just not for me. Good on you guys. Have fun.
Yeah, exactly. All the best. Just guys have fun.
Yeah.
I think this, did you want to ask me more? I was going to say if anybody wants to call in, I was going to give the Skype number out.
I might have got, let's see.
Because we're over a little now, but I don't care.
Oh, okay. Well.
I don't care.
Yeah.
People on the East Coast are probably going to sleep, and that's their loss. Yeah. Yeah, we lost like three listeners.
Oh, I thought, was there any plans with It Defies Language to do an audiobook version?
I thought about it. I mean, I don't even really know how to go about it.
I was thinking, would you want to read it if you were to do an audiobook version, or would you have
I could try it. What I was going to do was read like one entry and put it up online and see what people thought of it.
I think it's a good idea.
And see, it's like, would you be interested if me or somebody else, maybe Nick, because he has a British voice.
Nick, I thought Red Pill would be great. He's got a great timbre to his voice.
Yes, he does.
It's got such a rich,
My wife
deep
loves
voice.
His voice.
I do too. I love it.
Yeah.
I think I tweeted him that he should start some kind of podcast because like, anything he's on, I'll listen to.
Yeah.
And he's also brilliant.
Yes, he is.
Very smart.
Yeah, he's scary smart.
Yeah. I felt similar to him when he was on your show for the first time because he was really nervous.
Yeah, because I asked him like a year before that. He wrote me back and said, oh, my English isn't so good. And then he started appearing on a couple others.
His English is great. It's better
than
mine.
How about now? Yeah. How about now? Okay.
Yeah.
So he's been on a couple of them.
Yeah, he's a treasure.
Yep. I think I have the right Skype on if people want to call in it to 213-438-9958. The fader is up here so I can hear if you do call in. Are there other things you had on your phone there?
I think I might have crushed through all these, but I know I can come up with some.
Tim Benall messaged us.
Oh, hello.
Listening, great show. Too tired to call in, but I'm enjoying the show quite a bit. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Tim.
I like that guy, man. He seems like good people.
He is.
A great show.
Yeah, well, he threw me a lifeline, too, by getting me that Coast to Coast gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm eternally in his debt. No. Last two nights I have, though.
Yeah.
The first night with, what is it, John Hutchison, the like,
is that the
anti-gravity ray guy?
That guy's still, he's been around for,
I know.
He's been around for a long time.
He and his wife were on, and they made absolutely no sense whatsoever. I mean, they did, but there's somebody calling.
Ooh.
Wonder if they can hear me and we can hear them. Who's calling?
Hey, how's it going?
There we go. Who's this?
Yeah, how's it going?
All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, sure.
Who's this calling?
It's Jonathan.
Okay. So what's up? What did you want to talk about, ask, yell about, or insult us about?
Oh, I don't know. A myriad of things.
Pick one.
I don't know.
Have you been listening to the whole show?
Not really, no. I just called in.
Oh, okay.
I saw it on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Well, what's up, buddy?
Yep. And yeah, no, and he's like, call now. And it's like, all right, I'll call now.
And you don't know what to say. How long have you been listening to the show?
Tonight. Just
nice.
You haven't heard the show ever before?
Maybe not. What show is this?
Radio Mysterioso. You didn't even know which show you were calling into.
What's your myriad? Pick one of your myriad of questions.
UFOs,
Greg,
other
weird. What's going on, man? What's going on?
Yeah, we've been talking about UFOs, no. Weirdness, UFO religions, comedy, why comedy's funny, why it's threatened by people who are politically correct, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Indeed. I got you. Hold on one second. I got you on speaker for that. All right.
Okay.
So, Radio Mysterioso. Yes. Actually, yes. I have heard the show before.
You've never heard this show. Are you stoned right now?
No, I said I have heard the show before. It's on Kill Radio. On Kill Radio, right?
Yeah. I'm here some Sundays, not recently, because I've been doing work on Sunday nights, but the last couple weeks has been free. And Steve said he'd come down, and I've wanted to have Steve on for a while because he's a fan of the show, and plus he does interesting, cool work that interests me quite a bit.
Oh.
Right. So have there been Sirenstein or not? Or, I mean, I don't know. Have you heard of
Sirenstein? No sirens.
I was thinking that, too, a couple minutes ago.
So you have heard the show before.
Yes. Greg. I know you. You know me. I'm not going to tell you who I am, though, because I am, like, way... Yeah, I'm kind of messed up. So, sorry.
But you do... You said you know... Greg knows who you are?
Yeah, I think he does, possibly.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, through Facebook and correspondence and stuff like that, yeah.
Great.
Okay. Really? Since I'm not exactly sure who you are, do you want to ask me an embarrassing question?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have one?
From your myriad?
Do I have one?
Yes.
Do I have one?
An embarrassing question?
Sure. So for you.
Yes. Or Steve.
Let me see. An embarrassing question. Well, let's see. I don't know. I mean, I don't. I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hey, man.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of one, but let me see. I mean, like, okay. So paragliding.
Yeah.
Okay. An embarrassing question. So when you've been paragliding, have you ever had the occasion to perhaps soil yourself, shit yourself?
You know, never when I'm flying, because if I don't feel well, I don't go up. You mean shit myself, like, in a situation where I think I'm going to die and I, like, want to shit myself? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yes, that has happened a couple of times. Yeah. Paragliding. Once when I was flying an airplane, too, I bounced it on the runway. I thought I was going to crash. It was horrible.
That sounds awful.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, I misjudged, and it was a new airplane that I hadn't flown too much, and I flared too high, and the thing dropped like 10 or 15 feet and just smacked on the runway.
No thanks.
Yeah. Scared the crap out of me. And it was a very short runway, too. It's like the shortest runway in Southern California. Oh. So I chose that for my first flight after I got my pilot's license.
That makes sense.
On an unfamiliar aircraft. Really stupid.
Damn. Shit. I don't know.
So, yeah, I should have shit myself, but I didn't because I needed to land the airplane properly. Yeah. And plus, there was a bunch of people sitting at the airport watching me, probably scared out of their minds or laughing.
Oh, God.
People would go there to eat picnic lunches and watch the airplanes. Yeah. So I had like 20 people standing there watching me almost kill myself.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah. Damn. All right. So, Mr. Guest. Yeah. I don't know. Beyond that, can tell you anything.
Okay. Well, we'll open the line up for the next person then.
Indeed. Right on.
Okay.
All right, Greg, man. Hey, Greg, great show, man.
Later, bud.
Love it.
Thanks for calling in. All right.
Indeed.
There we go. I don't know where that area code is. We're 703. How would you rate the overall quality of this call? It's asking.
I mean, you know, because it was so interesting, because he called without any question. I think that's kind of a cool move, man.
Yeah. Call in now. Okay, I'm calling in.
Wait, what show is this?
I love
that guy.
Yeah. Go Rightly says, I think the caller is Tim Binal.
Yeah, that might have been, huh?
So you didn't have any... we got through most of the questions. You know what? Here is a very offensive, and I've played this before, comedy thing, and there's no swearing in it at all. It's Derek and Clive. Do you know who that is?
No. Are they
Peter
British?
Cook and Dudley Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know the Derek and Clive.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't know. I know Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. I don't know Derek and Clive.
Derek and Clive was something they did in the 70s, and they basically got together. They would get extremely drunk, and they would say anything they wanted to. And Peter Cook is the master, was the master of being funny always. He was always on. So they, I think they might have had some notes about what they wanted to talk about, but it was mostly improvised.
Wow.
And this one is... it is called Cancer, and it is one of the most devastatingly funny Zen pieces of comedy I've ever heard. It probably is. It's the joke is buried in. If you had to explain the joke, it is not. It's not funny. You can't explain the joke. You right. have to hear it. It's a minute. It's 1 minute. Steve, tell me what you think of this.
This is gonna be a treat.
I heard that George Stitt had moved away from the Willesden area and. Gone up around Chadwell Heath.
Cancer?
Yeah.
Oh, my. It's funny you should say that, because you remember Enid, who used to live across the road at number 104?
Yeah, just next to 105. Yeah.
Right. she's now working at the United Dairies down Green Lane.
What, cancer? Christ. Remember the Nolan twins?
Oh, yeah.
Fifi Nolan.
And Ronnie.
And Ronnie Nolan, yeah. They've taken up darts.
Cancer?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
That's amazing.
That's the most genius piece of comedy. It's got to be in the top three
that
I've ever heard.
I love Dudley Moore.
I don't.
You don't?
No, I think Dudley Moore would have been... He's a great entertainer, but he's not... He's only funny with... he's 10 times funnier with Peter Cook.
Right.
To me.
Have you ever seen the movie Bedazzled?
That is one of my favorite movies ever.
He's great in that movie.
Yes, he is. But if he's not playing playing against Peter
right.
Cook, he's not. To me.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Not nearly as good.
Did you ever see Arthur?
Yes.
That's a good movie.
Yes,
the movie,
it is.
But he's not, he's not like fall to your chair. There it is. Thank you. Guys, the sirens. Now it's all complete. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. This is real. I can attest to it.
Huh. Yep. We can even see the light down there. Okay, there he goes. Yeah, because Beverly is, and Vermont are apparently like corridors for ambulance and fire engines.
Yeah, it's weird. And like, I think people often think like this area is like a really bad area because of the sirens, but this is Beverly in Vermont.
It is not a good area, but it's not a bad area.
It's not a bad area at all.
I mean, you're not going to get assaulted here. You're not going to get robbed, anything
Never.
Like that.
No.
Not especially not at this intersection.
No. This is technically Koreatown, right?
Yes. Very, very northern edge of Koreatown.
Right.
Yeah.
I like Koreatown, man.
Yep. Good coffee shops and restaurants in Koreatown.
Yep.
And the Wiltern is in Koreatown.
Yep, that's a good theater.
I saw Devo there year before last.
Oh, I love that last album they came out with. He's wearing a Devo shirt right now. Did you like the last album they made?
Not as much as the others, but I liked it.
Well, I'll agree with you that.
They still have it.
That's what I'm saying. For like, guys who are...
In their... 60s
and like who have been doing it for so long to put out an album that's like, you're like, damn, that's pretty fucking good, man. Like,
you know what's weird is a couple years ago the Cars put it out an album and they sounded exactly like
they did in the
80s. It was a good album.
Yeah,
it wasn't like mind blowing. It's like, oh my god, they didn't miss a beat. It sounds exactly like the Cars.
Good, that's nice.
That's exactly what people wanted, I guess. Well, not as much. I think they like toured once for it and that was it. Benal says, the caller was not me. I thought he was doing an impression of me. Goretley said, that was the worst/best call ever.
Yeah.
This is why we like Tim Benal and Adam Goretley.
Yeah, they get it. They get it.
Yeah.
Where does this... Adam Goretley doesn't... He lives in California, right?
Yeah. He lives in Central California.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, you're welcome to come down anytime you want.
Oh, my gosh. Well... I'll take you up on that.
Okay. Well, I had fun. And people,
yeah,
I
me too, man.
We kept the audience, too, through the entire
Did
show.
Did we? Good.
Yes, people liked it.
Good.
I pride the show on being able to talk to anyone about just about anything.
You can.
Yeah.
You're a very, very experienced conversationalist.
Thank you.
It's a good quality to have, man.
Yeah, it's funny. My over the past couple of years, I'd go down and see my parents, and my dad is and my mom, and to some extent, they, my dad said, "You can talk to anybody. You should use that."
Smart.
I said, "I am."
Yeah, I mean,
no, I mean, you should use it to improve your life and
yeah.
have more experiences. It's like, yeah, if you can talk to anybody about anything, you get to see and do shit
yeah.
that you wouldn't normally.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why that chapter in the book is called "People Make This World." This is like, that's what my mother told me a lot. She's been telling me that for a long time. You gotta get involved with people.
Yeah, I couldn't
Not,
agree
you
more.
You don't force it or anything, but you gotta get involved with people. Let them know what you're about. Let them tell you what they're about. And if cool stuff can happen, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what else do you want?
Communication
you know?
Is beautiful.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
exactly.
It's really wonderful.
Yeah. The guest gets to pick the lead out music.
Ooh.
And I'll probably just be able to find it on YouTube.
You know what song has been rolling in my head and I've been loving lately? It's Waylon Jennings.
Really?
Lonesome, Ornery, and Mean. Have you heard that song?
I know about it.
Oh, it is fantastic.
Yeah, Lonesome, on apostrophe, R-Y,
yep,
and Mean.
Yep.
Should we tell anybody about anything else you're doing? Because you're on the what's it called? Bad.
It's called Idiot Sitter.
Idiot Sitter.
That's well, we haven't started shooting the second season. That's in a couple months. But yeah, I'm actually working on a new show tomorrow. It's an NBC show called The Good Life or The Good Place.
Ah.
But they're not telling me what my character is or anything. And they're like
on purpose.
Yeah, and they're like, I'm showing up there. I have no idea what I'm saying or
didn't
doing.
You have to go read for it? Or
I
anything?
Did, but they gave me like dummy audition sides.
Huh.
So I did audition for a couple times, and they're like, great, you got the job. I'm like, cool, what am I doing? They're like, we can't tell you. I'm
can't
like,
tell
all
you.
Right, that makes sense.
who's directing it, Coppola? I mean, it sounds like one of those
exactly. You would think it was like Twin Peaks or something, but
yeah.
It's a sitcom. So
I don't know. Maybe that sounds like a really good experiment, actually.
It could be cool. A guy named Drew Goddard is directing it. Who?
Okay, I don't know either. I'm not hooked in.
Yeah, he's a good director, so it'll be kind of fun.
Okay. And you continue with your work on Drunk History, I guess.
Yep.
I really think you should do another UFO one. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
people like that one.
I will help you with it you don't have to pay me or tell anybody or anything.
Okay.
I would just love to like consult on it.
Hey man, if you know, I mean, when they do the, they'll have like a party, a premiere party. I'll get you tickets to the premiere party. Cause it's
excellent.
Very fun.
I bet
it's the best party of any premiere party in town.
I would love to go.
Because there is copious amounts of booze. That's
of course
free,
there is.
Great food and people.
It's called just, Drunk History. It's, talking about a dry
it
party.
It is the most fun. I'll definitely take you. I promise.
Okay, cool. Okay, here's Waylon. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you, man. This is a real bucket list moment for me.
All right. You want to go to the pie?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go to pie. I haven't done that in a while.
Let's go to the pie, dude.
Yeah, it's right near where you live, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like so close.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm parking your driveway.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Steve Berg. This was a lot of fun, and it was... I did not know it was going to be so fun, because you sounded like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. It's like, you're totally cool with it,
oh,
so
thanks,
that's
man.
Fine. Yeah.
Really
loved
great.
Having you. And here's Waylon Jennings with Lonesome, Ornery, and Mean. And I'll probably, after that's done, I'll probably play other music while I break down here. Some of the other weird stuff I've picked up. Actually, not weird. You know what I found was Vince Guaraldi playing the Peppermint Patty theme song. You know, the one you hear in the Charlie
sure.
Brown. But it's live on stage with a big jazz band, and it sounds beautiful. So I'll play that after Waylon Jennings.
Oh, man, he's so good.
Yeah. So let's see what Waylon Jennings' Lonesome Ornery Mean sounds like. Ornery.
Ornery.
Ornery. It probably helps if the volume is up. I don't know why it's... because we were looking at two hamsters, one wheel. And I
two hamsters, one wheel.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, man.
On a Greyhound bus, Lord, I'm traveling this morning. Ornery and mean.
hair was jet black, and her name was Golding. Thought she was the cream of the Basin Street Queens. She got tired of that smoky wine dream. Began to feel lonesome. Sweeps. Gave on to a beggar who was mumbling through the streets. There's no escaping from his snowy white dreams. Born dead and lonesome.
Pepper and Patty thing.